Good morning. It is 9:05 a.m. on Wednesday, November 20th, 2013. I'll call to order the Dallas City Council briefing meeting for this week. And we will start with our invocation. It's a pleasure to have Pastor Lloyd Hall here from the St. Luke Missionary Baptist Church in Mr. Medrano's district. He received his bachelor's degree from Bishop College that we all know and love, and was later he earned a master's degree from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary over in Fort Worth. He has been a pastor in the North Park area for over 18 years now, so it's great to have you here. Following that, Mr. Allen will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you.
All rise.
Thank you, Mayor. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we gather together as a community in a journey of trusting in you. We join as one another as a city of Dallas. Oh, how we thank you for our mayor, our city council representatives, those who have a vision to make Dallas a better city for all who live in. We thank you, Lord, for the deep sacrifice that our police, firemen, and all security has made in the years that they have pledged their lives on the line for us to make Dallas a better place. We pray now that we would all remember your grace and love that comes to us every day. Now, Lord, as we reflect upon 1963, we pray that we would show love, peace, and understanding to all young people, that they will know what President John Fitzgerald Kennedy fought hard for. Bless our city. Bless those who will visit. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Mr. Allen?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we proceed, it's important to know that much of the city council this last week went to a national convention called the National League of Cities. It really is a conference talking about the best practices of city management and city leadership. It's really the best and the brightest. We should be very proud that our mayor Pro Tem Tonell Atkins was elected to the board of directors of that organization in this last meeting. A lot of hard work and a sign of respect for Dallas, but also a sign of respect for you, Mr. Atkins. Congratulations.
I just want to thank Jennifer Gate, Lee Kleiman, Chef Cadane, Jerry Alvin, Phil Kingsley, Alan Medrano, and Rick Callahan. I mean, those was the people who came and support me to the fullest. And also our inner city manager, AC, and also Brett. You know, thank you all for supporting me.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. We've got two presentations from council and one other presentation today. Mr. Cadane, you're up first.
Thank you, Mayor, for this. This is very special. We're going to honor a nonprofit volunteer group today. It's called Box 4 Fire Bluff Association. These guys, wherever we have a rescue going on, any situation, airport, police, fire, wherever it is, they are there to support our police and fire. and all of our rescue. They feed them, they help them. I'll tell you what, you don't hear about them, you don't know about them, but they're always there. That's what's so fantastic. Now, Chief Bright, are you gonna accept this? Have you got a group out here? Can we get them all up?
Absolutely.
You guys come on up. And these are our volunteers, correct? You come on up. Everybody there that's involved with them, please come up. Good job, Ed. Okay, now we're going to hear a little bit about them. Box 4 Fire Bluff Association, Inc. is a nonprofit organization operated entirely by volunteers offering rehabilitation services for the past 50 years to the City of Dallas, public safety departments, and surrounding jurisdictions. Since 1963, the volunteers of Box 4 have provided rehabilitation services to the workmen and women of Dallas, responding 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. Volunteers provide firefighters, police, and other public safety members a refuge from incidents they are working. Box 4 plays an integral part in the Dallas Fire Rescue First Response Protocol. When notified or requested, volunteers respond to a working incident, provided a security and stable place for fire personnel to rehabilitate. Operating from a customized rehab canteen, volunteers provide water, electrolyte drinks, coffee, and snacks. Meals are provided for longer duration events. Misting fans and other devices are made available for cooling workers in hot weather, and gas heaters are provided in cold weather. Portable chairs are also provided at these incidents. Once recuperated, public safety members can return back to the incident fully rejuvenated and ready to work. Box 4 responds to 2 alarm or greater fires and other emergencies in the Dallas area. They also respond to the Dallas Police Tactical Team incidents, training, derailments, aircraft emergencies at Love Field and DFW Airport, hazmat operations, major public safety events, and Dallas Fire Rescue, Urban Search, and Rescue Team incidents. Box 4 has also provided services to other City of Dallas departments when requested, such as stormwater and streets. In 2013 alone, Box 4 has furnished over 10,000 individual servings to Dallas first responders and victims. In its 50-year history, they have given over 1 million individual servings during operations in support of the City of Dallas. Thank you, guys. This is a fantastic group, which you don't ever hear about, but they're there. And they're there for the entire city and this community. Thank you guys so much. Who do we present this to? You? Can we get a picture,
Chief? Of course. Bring him.
Thank you, gentlemen and lady, for all that you do for our fire, police, and the citizens of Dallas. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Our next recognition is a joint recognition with Mr. Caraway and Mr. Griggs. Mr. Griggs?
Good morning, Mayor and City Council, and to our esteemed guest that's with us. I am Dallas City Councilman Dwayne Caraway.
Scott Griggs.
Mayor, because National Night Out is so and such an important night, and because you, on your charge, have been trying to bring neighborhood associations together, for the first time, both Scott Griggs in District 1, myself in District 4, we chose to come together to bring the community together, to bring in one under one tent everybody, so that we could have a joint national night out and we could take advantage of it. And let me tell you, it was simply wasn't it fantastic, Scott?
It was more than fantastic.
All right. So this is one thing about it. We chose and we made every decision collectively together. No one office did more than the other office. It was a joint deal. And every decision was a joint decision. And at the end of the day, it proved to have worked extremely well. We did not know what to expect. We knew what our expectations were. But at the end of the day, people stepped up to the plate. And today is a day that we want to say that when we went to Keys Park, there are so many things that needed to be done. And when you're inviting people to your house, of course, you want to make sure that all the I's dotted, T's across, and you throw things away that you don't want to expose. But at the end of the day, the city staff, they did one tremendous job. And I'm talking about from the people that were picking up the litter, from the folks that were cleaning the restrooms, from the electricians that had to run electricity, from the people in the park department that had to do what they had to do, public works, every department in this city participated. And today we want to say congratulations and thank you to those folks so they can know that they are appreciated. But now we wouldn't be able to do it without our sponsors, and our sponsors are here, and we want to at least call their names and give them their recognition because they made it very simple for us. They participated and gave us the tools that we needed to have in order to do these great things. One of our sponsors, let me just call a name, Scott. I'm going to just call one of a couple of these people out.
Call them up.
All right. Now, one, Erin Ragsdale and her husband, Cal, they went and bought chips on their own. And because we didn't have no chips, and we forgot to order the chips. But Erin and her husband went and got Erin. Come on up here, Erin. Yeah, come on up here, Erin. Come, yeah, I called you out publicly. Come on. She can't bring her husband. He's at work. Frito-Lay at work. But you would think that things like this aren't important. But we had to have these chips to go with all these other great things. And when we say Walmart stepped up to the plate, you know, I have a new Walmart that's opening January 16th, I-35 at Loop 12, growing south in the southern sector. And Walmart, come on up here, Walmart. She flew in from Austin just to come in today so she could celebrate this special recognition with us, appreciating our employees. But when I tell you Walmart stepped up to the plate, you should have seen the ice chest that we had in the back of my truck. That we put all of the drinks and all of the cups and all of the different things that Walmart did and that you all have always done. We appreciate that. We want to say thank you. But you can't do it without energy. So Atmos Energy stepped up. Come on, Atmos.
Come on down.
Come on down. Atmos stepped up to the plate. And what I tell you, they stepped up to the plate in a big way because we didn't have any seed opportunities, is what I would call that, in order to get this thing started. But they stepped up to the plate. And you know, Darling International, they stepped up to the plate, and they went and bought more than 50 briskets for us. 50 briskets, about 1,700 pounds of briskets and chicken that we got from Walmart, and the briskets from Darling. But then we had to have somebody come and barbecue this stuff. They didn't want my barbecue and Scotch barbecue.
Oh, no.
And we weren't going to barbecue. Were we going to barbecue all this and stay up all night and barbecue this food? We could not do that. So the Dallas Police Association, the greatest police association and the greatest police department in the world, stepped up to the plate. Ron, bring all them police with you. And now I'm going
Two days.
These guys can barbecue. Now the only thing that the only thing we had to do about the barbecue, Mayor, you know, they had to have something to barbecue on. And so you remember the stolen barbecue pit from the GQA. Well, they got it back. And they used that to barbecue, and they came out and volunteered, and they stood up there, and they barbecued. How many days, Scott?
2 days, I'm told. Two days. Turned up meat.
All of the things we had, they barbecued. I'm telling you that they did. And citywide development, even Sherman had to step up to the plate and get some things done. We made Sherman step up to the plate. And Radio 1 stepped up to the plate. Rudy's Chicken stepped up to the plate. And then the other one that really stepped up to the plate, there's a hospital across the street, University Hospital, and University General Hospital. Warren here with University General? Warren, Mr. Irvin, would you kindly come and represent that hospital as you've been doing? So, y'all give him a hand. I think I can't even step up to the plate. Who did we forget? We can't forget the Dallas Park and Recreation. The foundation, Park and Recreation Foundation, when I tell you they stepped up to the plate, Park and Recreation did everything that we asked them to do. They prepared the park, repaired the park, resod it, re-cemented, did everything at the park. So Dallas Park Department and the foundation would like for you all to come up. Who's coming from the Park Department? Come on up here from the Park Department. Yeah, come on up here, Park Department. All the Park Department. All right. I mean, now these people were people that all had a hand in doing work for this event. And when I tell you all, we want to personally thank you all. Scott and I, we want to say thank you.
Does Scott want to say anything?
This was a collaborative process, as you can tell when you work with Dwayne.
Scott, bring encore.
We got encore. Come on up here. And we got the Reeds.
Reed stepped up to the plate. Encore stepped up to the plate. And who are we? The fire department. Where's the fire department? Come on, Ben. Now, where's EBS? Where are the folks from EBS? They did everything. Mayor, they bought chips. Scott, tell them what EBS did.
They got just about everything ready. Because, Mayor, as you know, this is a big plate everyone had to step up to. Because I think we had several thousand people there, Dwayne. We had well over 2,000 people. We had pinatas that needed to be set up. We had a stage. We fixed up the pavilion. We grilled. Let's just show the video.
Yeah, let's show the video. Don't y'all go nowhere. Now, that's a new sidewalk. Those are signs. Radio station 94.5. All the neighborhood folks from the community came out there. All y'all back there in the back room, y'all come on around here. Scott has a lot to say.
I'll call out some names while the video's going. We'll multitask here. I have a lot to say. Well, as we get going, we're going to individually thank some people the city of Dallas that helped out. Luke Lawrence, Silvrio Valencia, Michael Waldrop, Zachary Craven, Daniel Mulville, Mike Mata, Scott Sayers, Frederick Frazier, James Parnell, Wes Melton, Jermaine Nation, Ron Pinkston, Stokes, Diane Gibson, Ulysse Waters, Van Hamen Powell, Major Barry, Jose Delgado, Tony Buchanan, Lutricia Carroll, Jack Franks, Mark Colborne, Cheryl Cornish, Tracy Jones, Brad Deason, Jorge Guzman, Natalie Moreland, John Hepworth, Corey Anderson, Glenn Delgado, LaRatha Shepherd, James Petty, Jerry Rhodes, Destiny Gomez, Justin Serrato, Gabrielle Roscoe, Heaven Moore, Amanda Chavez, Anna Cabellos, Nino Chavez, Danny Gonzalez, Hunter Smith, Abraham Lopez, Chris Hawkins, Paul Van Wagner, Deputy Chief Bill Garza, Major Williams Marks, Lieutenant Daniel Correla, Lieutenant Ben Neighbors, Lieutenant Tim Jeffers, Lieutenant Paulette Richardson, Christopher Young, Donna Hernandez, Chris Zaffarini, Antonio Hudson, Laura Johnson, Willie Williams, Margarita Argumendo, Sean Hike, Robert Spence, Daniel Navarez, Brian Martinez, Scott Corky, Jorge Guzman, Tintiana Richard. Now from Equipment and Building Services, Milton Alexander, Charles Markham, Danny Irago, Raymond Wilson, Eris Lari, Carlos Gomez, Dorian Gaballero. And I apologize to anyone if I'm misspelling your name. This gives you a new respect for the people that stand up there and call out the names when they come up. It's a lot of names. Philip Hooks, Osvaldo Montiango, Jeremy Aguianga, Kevin Mitchell, Lorenzo Gomez, Avalanda, Dallas Water Utilities, Dorinda Stewart, Joel Tillery, Adam Hewitt, Guadalupe Rodriguez, Ernesto Romero, Ivan Flores, Anthony Ashford, Lorenzo Rice, Ricardo Vela, Linda Henderson, Shauna Williams, Alexander, Charles Thomas, Sheila Wilson, Annette Robinson, Vicky Smith, Lila Gomez, Captain Brent Wise, Lieutenant Kevin Stewart, Jeff Hiles, Chris Johnson, Mike Hamilton, Mark O'Hagan, Albert Womack, Chris Pace, Keith Jones, Jim Royer, Daisy Castaneda, Anthony Jacobs, Sparky the Fire Dog, Chief Louie Bright, and from Street Services, Eric Corrado, Avery Lovely, Dennis Shimaka Jr., Alex Wong, Janie Valencia, Derek Shade, Victor Reyna, Richard Hill, Gabe Hernandez, Mr. Dickerson, and Kevin Acosta.
And here's your rest. And Mayor, do you see why he has so much to say? I would have messed up all those people's names.
I messed up about half of them.
All right, go ahead.
All right. Dale Adams, Kenneth Argusta, Dennis Bailey, David Boblitz, Todd Bennett, David Boyd, Jerome Cabell, Victoria Chavarina, Maximo Chavez, Pablo Chavez, Ivory Clark, Roddy Clark, Richard Conger, Mitchell Conley, Marvin Cox, Adam Craver, Jerry Foote, Lyle Foster, Jose Garcia, Alan Gates, Gerald Glasscock, Lance Golden, Jose Gomez, Clive Graham, Jerry Harrison, Carl Heggie, Thomas Hinojosa, Robert Koska, Alfred Kelly, Carrollton King, Tommy LaCour, William Lusk Fisher, Wayne McGee, Johnny McLean, Harvey Moss, Juan Parra, Carmen Ramos, Raymond Robles, Sandra Robinson, Joe Sanchez, Martina Sanchez, Octiva Sanchez, Gregory Stevens, Fred Thompson, James Tittle, Phil Brito, Tanche, Juan Vargas, Idiala Valasquez, Doyle Velker, and last but not least, Jeremy Wilson, and that does about 250 names. So thank you very much.
Now, and we bring this to a close, Mayor. We want to make sure that Valanda, Steve, Norma, April, Kevin, Mina, all you all come on up to the front. Without these guys, we would not have done it. They're our administrative assistants that works for us. And we put all the load and responsibility on them. And we want you all to come on up here so folks know just how hard you all work. All right. Mayor, thank thank you all, and to all of you all, thank you. It would not have been done. And what we're going to do, we're going to meet you all in the flag room and give and distribute all of your certificates. Each and every one of you will receive a certificate that they've worked so hard to put together for you in appreciation for all that you do and all that you have done on behalf of the city of Dallas. So we want to say that to you, and we'll see you all in the flag room just right after we take pictures and after Scott has the closing remarks.
I'll wrap up. I think everything that's been said has been said, but I just want to say thank you, because we all know what this is about, the city of Dallas and the relationship with all those communities, not only in Oak Cliff but throughout Dallas. And so all of you make it happen on a day-in, day-out basis. And everything that you did today and your recognition is just a thank you not only for this event but your continued service here at the city of Dallas. So thank you all.
Thank you. We have one last piece of recognition, and we touched on this last week, but Chief Bright, I think, has something of significance to say to one of our council people.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for allowing us this opportunity to recognize an individual that gave another individual a chance at life a couple of weeks ago. Just as a 30-second background, one of the major stats that's tracked across the nation is survival rates of individuals that become unconscious in whatever situation that might be. And we're proud to say here in Dallas, Dallas Fire Rescue is one of the top two or three cities in this nation in terms of survival rates. We've tripled survival rates over the last few years based on much research and new techniques and procedures that our paramedics perform on a daily basis. However, moving forward, one of our major efforts is public education in terms of even teaching our citizens just basic life support measures that if something occurs and they're present, that they can take some actions to further be an extension of us to help even further increase our survival rate. So at any rate, on November 4th, an incident occurred where an individual became unconscious while eating at a local establishment, and the individual recognizing today took immediate action, began resuscitation efforts, and based on those actions, that individual survived and is still living today. And so we wanted, I know it's been well publicized over the last couple of weeks, but certainly we did not want to allow this to pass without Dallas Fire Rescue honoring and mentioning Council Member Jennifer Staubach Gates for her actions on November 4th.
Thank you, and this really was not necessary, but I think I've gotten way too much attention for what I did with what I had training for. I stood up, I was comfortable in the situation, but really I want to bring public awareness to it. Anybody in that restaurant could have done what I had done that evening, and then the more people that are trained in CPR, the better our community is. So I really encourage the community. It doesn't take a background in medicine. It just takes someone that has the knowledge and the training to be able to do CPR, and that's really what makes the difference. They can't, the EMS, as quick as they can get there, it's really those that first response that makes the difference. So I'm pleased that the outcome was good, and I'm done with the recognition for this. So, but everybody go out there and learn CPR. So in case something happens to me, I need to be taken care of.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Bright. Thank you, Ms. Gates. I think we're ready for our morning speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your speakers this morning begin with Richard Sheridan, Carol Bell Walton, Claudia Meyer, Ed Meyer, and Jim Schermbeck. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making pertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council, will be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You should state your name and address for the record, as well your comments need to be directed to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Richard Sheridan.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Mayor, City Council. Morning, Richard. I appreciate being here today. Richard Sheridan, 3022 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas. And God bless and be with Dallas and our nation during these times. I'll start off at the end and then go back to the beginning. I want to quote Oliver Stone. Why is it important today to get to the truth of the who and the why was President Kennedy assassinated? To quote Oliver Stone in his review of the great book, The Unspeakable, highly recommended by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., quote, the death of JFK remains a critical turning point in our history. Those who caused his death were targeting not just a man, but a vision of peace. There is no calculating the consequences of his death for this country and for the world. Those consequences endure. To a large extent, the fate of our country and the future of our planet continue to be controlled by the shadowy forces of what Douglass calls the unspeakable. Only by unmasking these forces and confronting the truth about our history can we resolve the promise of democracy and lay claim to Kennedy's vision of peace. Veterans Day has just passed, the day we honor those who have served in our military, with some giving their lives to maintain our freedoms. When all is said and done, the total cost, the military-industrial complex cost, and the medical and the physical, mental and physical health care costs of both the Afghan and Iran wars will reach, and it's been published out there, $4 trillion. We are seeing the highest suicide rates in our military's history. We are seeing some of our military becoming terrorists. I was almost drafted into the Vietnam War, whose architect, Robert McNamara, and former President Clinton have both stated that it was a war we should not have pursued. In that war, there were 58,000 military deaths and near or greater than 1 million soldiers with physical and mental disabilities. But there but for the grace of God go I. Are our current Afghanistan and Iraq wars also wrong wars? Are they the wars that Kennedy would also have either pulled us out of, as he started to do in Vietnam, or not have initiated? President John F. Kennedy's greatest legacy is that he, working with Khrushchev, stopped World War III, and for this reason alone, he was our greatest president. Many of us would not be here today had it not been for John F. Kennedy. However, our local Dallas Morning News, today's city and county's newspaper, which facilitates some corruption. Corruption's all over Washington, D.C., Austin, Texas. Condemned Kennedy. Mr. Dealey condemned Kennedy in 61 at a publisher's meeting. And he represented the conservative interest at the time that Kennedy was confronting. You'll get a copy of the full speech. I appreciate this very much, and again, God be with the city during these important times.
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan.
Your next speaker is Carol Bell Walton.
Carol Bell Walton, District 9. Good morning, and thank you for letting me speak this morning. Mr. Mayor, the newspaper said that you were nervous about the speech that you'll be giving for the somber anniversary, and I just want you to know that even if you're nervous, I have all the faith in the world in you, and I know you'll do a good job and do Dallas proud. And I don't know that there's anybody I'd rather have up there speaking for us. So I look forward to your remarks. But I want to talk to you today about a parks issue, as always. And I'll start off by saying that I really don't like debt. Nonetheless, every time there's a bond election, I review the propositions and I decide if it is good for the city of Dallas and if it is good for our vision, that I will vote to incur debt for the city. It's reprehensible to me personally, but I understand the business model and I understand that it has to be done. In 2006, I voted for Proposition 3, which sold bonds, which incurred debt for the city, because it showed vision. Proposition 3 set aside lands for future parks in Dallas. It showed a commitment to future generations that Dallas was going to offer a quality of life that is just going to continue to improve. The bond election passed. True to the word, Dallas bought a 3.5-acre tract, and it was the future site of Pacific Plaza Park. Everything went exactly as it should. There's a sign that says it is a future park site. And then we read in the paper that a builder now has his sights set on that piece of land because he had not thought through his parking options when he bought two buildings close to that park site. It's not a proposed park site. It is a park site that has not yet been developed. There is a difference. The purpose of that land is designated. His dilemma is that he really doesn't want to use the first four floors of his building for parking because that would be economically adverse to his development. Well, I don't really, that wasn't a caveat in the election. There wasn't an asterisk on that ballot that said the city of Dallas is going to buy this land for a park and we might give it to a builder if he happens to need it more than the people of Dallas. So now that the use of this land is being contested and that the Economic Development Group in Dallas is working with a developer to change the purpose of this, I have to say that how can I believe future propositions? How can I believe what's on a ballot? If we say we're going to buy land for a designated purpose, that's what the purpose should be. The clouds around City Hall, the yellow cab debacle. I mean, we need to be able to trust something in this city, and we have to be able to trust our ballots. If the purpose of this land changes, what can we believe? How can we be sure that in future elections we can get what we pay for and what we vote for?
Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is
Before we get to the next speaker, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just briefly, wanted to let you know that the way this has been portrayed in the media doesn't tell the full story. I do not believe that bond funds will be diverted to an above-ground parking garage at that location. I had a meeting this week with adjacent landowners and Jody Grant, who is one of the drivers behind Clyde Warren Park, to discuss how we can make Pacific Plaza Park successful. We are well aware that that is precious parkland, and I don't think anybody on this council wants to sacrifice any part of it for parking. We're going to have a future parking debate in this city. Downtown has some parking needs. It does not have the parking needs that are currently being talked about in the paper, frankly. And that will be a subject for future debate on this body, and it will not be a decision that will be made by developers, frankly. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kleinman.
Just briefly, thank you for speaking on this. And as a former park board member, as many of this council are, we recognize the importance and the preciousness of our green space in downtown. And the decision will be made by this council and not by a particular department. Departments engage with businesses and look at proposals. And we have a very open dialogue with developers. But the final decision comes here. And I think you can feel comfortable that we will not be jeopardizing our green space in the city of Dallas in the way you're talking about. So,
well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Next speaker. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Claudia Meyer. Ms. Meyer is going to be followed by Ed Meyer and then Jim Schermitt.
Good morning. My name is Claudia Meyer. I live at 6015 Fox Point Trail, Mountain Creek area, District 3. I want to speak to you today about the proposed gas drilling ordinance setback of 1,500 feet. I want to compare a small city of Lubbock with Dallas. Even Lubbock, which already has 100 wells, has a proposed update to a 1,500-foot setback from the well site to property lines. Why? Their Board of Health recommended it. There are public health concerns, and new studies will be discussed by a future speaker to this morning. You will hear more about these studies by that speaker. Lubbock has a population of 2,600. Dallas has 1.5 million. Lubbock's setback is 1,500 feet. Dallas should have a minimum of 1,500 feet. And then there are the property value impacts from drilling, too, as shown in the case study performed by Flower Mound. And as a consequence, Flower Mound has a 1,500-foot setback. Other cities that have allowed gas drilling have gone to 1,500 feet after experiencing negative impacts. We must learn from their experiences and establish that right from the start. The Gas Drilling Task Force spent 8 months, and the City Plan Commission worked from May to September in many hours of meetings to improve on the task force recommendations. When the task force voted to reduce the setbacks down to 500 feet, in some cases, it was controversial. There was a split vote, and it was a big reason why neighborhood groups didn't support the task force recommendations. The task force's minority report recommended 1,500 feet instead. When the City Plan Commission voted for 1,500 feet, it was unanimous. After the City Planning Commission voted for the second time to do that, Mayor Rawlings publicly said he would support the CPC ordinance. We need for council members to support Mayor Rawlings in his leadership and vote for a 1,500 setback as a minimum. It will be one of the most important votes you will cast. Thank you. Appreciate it. The next speaker is Ed Meyer, and he could not be here.
Thank you. Jim Schoenbeck. Mr. Schoenbeck will be followed by Molly Rook.
Jim Schoenbeck, Downwinders at Risk, 5610 Cliff Haven, 75236. Today's staff briefing, as you just heard, displays the recommendations of the task force and the CPC side by side. But as somebody who watched both entities at work, I can tell you that the CPC recommendations are superior in at least four specific ways that are no fault of Lois or anybody else in the task force. They were just things that happened in the last 2 years that are important. One is the scope. You had two more additional years to gather evidence, and it turns out some of the most important epidemiological evidence came out in the last 2 years after the task force had finished meeting. There's also the Center for Disease Control, the problem of silica pollution, earthquakes. All of this came out after the task force quit meeting. More issues were considered as well. Compressor stations are a great example. The task force did not understand or realize the significance of their position in the natural gas cycle, and so were ignored pretty much entirely. The CPC addressed them, wrote recommendations for them, and you'll find them in your packet there. The second reason is experience. The Trinity East permit fight gave everybody facts on the ground that we did not have during the task force sessions. They gave the CPC a kind of experience, a kind of facts on the ground experience that nobody at the task force had because it was all theory or secondhand information from other cities. Actually, we had a fight here in Dallas that everybody learned from, including the CPC. I think you saw that reflected in the final product. If you look at the perspective, the CPC was much more residential friendly. They knew what questions to ask because they come across these issues all the time. They took the citizens' perspective for a facility like this in a way that I don't think the task force was charged with doing or could do necessarily. They were very detailed-oriented, whereas the task force was more general principles. And I think you see this in the recommendations that are before you today. If you look at the way that the resolution of the issue was considered in both venues, the task force, as Ms. Meyer said, split very seriously down the middle on important votes and dissolved in rancor at the end when positions were reversed with not all the members there. It just wasn't a very good feeling. There wasn't consensus. On the other hand, the CPC's final meeting was a consensus, a slow and steady process, a 14-1 vote consensus, where we stood up and congratulated the members of the commission on their work. It's the difference between unannounced visit to places and bus tours. It's the difference between hearing the same citizens' concerns and incorporating those versus hearing them and then leaving them out of the final product. It's important for you to realize the extension of the CPC work on the original task force recommendations. They're far superior, and we urge you to adopt them as a whole. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is Molly Rook. Ms. Rook will be the final speaker this morning.
I'm Molly Rook, representing the Dallas Sierra Club. I live at 5825 Palm Lane in Dallas. The decision that you will make on the gas drilling ordinance is one of the most important decisions you will make for our health and safety, our quality of life, our property values, and our efforts to make Dallas the forward-thinking, world-class city laid out in Forward Dallas. The New York Times is covering this debate in Dallas, and elected officials from Germany and Ukraine have come to Dallas to learn about gas drilling concerns. Cities across the state and nation are struggling to find what they believe to be the so-called right balance between people and profit. Some cities in Colorado, some states in the U.S., and even some countries have banned fracking altogether. Dallas, on the other hand, seems to be working hard to thread the needle to find a middle ground between dangerous practices and the strongest protection of all, a moratorium or total bans. We've studied and deliberated on this ordinance for 3 years. What we have to show for it certainly isn't perfect. There are parts of it that we would want to improve and make stronger. But taken as a whole, it contains some of the strongest public health protections of ordinances in the DFW Metroplex, most of which are dangerously weak. And so we support this compromise ordinance as it's proposed. The gas industry does not like it, of course, but it's their job not to like it. They do not have the right to operate in ways that put people at risk. So many people are watching locally, statewide, nationally, and internationally. Dallas must show leadership and do what's right. Pass this ordinance and separately continue the ban on drilling, gas drilling activities in the floodplain and on our parklands. Thank you.
That concludes the speakers. All other individuals signed up for the morning session will be called in the afternoon. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Please proceed with the agenda, voting agenda.
Thank you. Item number one is approval of minutes of the November 6, 2013 City Council meeting.
So moved. Got a motion and a second. Any edits? Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. At this morning, you basically have board and commission officers as well. There's going to be a record, but I mean, a ballot vote required for two vice chair nominees. For your consideration, you have Catherine D. Sealy to the Landmark Commission as chair, is nominated by Mayor Rawlings. Maleska Fledis is to the Animal Shelter Commission, is nominated as vice chair by Councilmember Cadane. And Felix G. Salcedo to the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board is nominated as vice chair by Councilmember Cadane. Those are your first items.
We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Staff is now going to distribute a ballot vote, which is required. We did receive two vice chair nominees to the South Dallas Fair Park Development Fund Board. They are Suzanne Smith, who is nominated by Councilmember Kingston, as well as Gerald Larson, who is nominated by Councilmember Allen. The ballot votes will be counted, and I'll report the results of the ballot later in the meeting. When you're finished casting your vote, if you'll go ahead and please raise your ballot, staff will pick them up. Thank you.
Mr. Allen, I'm sorry. I've got a little contact problem. So.
I had one of my council members remind me I haven't done a very good job about educating the council on my nomination, Mr. Larson. Mr. Larson served on the board for several years, and particularly as vice chair, and at one time as chair he stood up and when there was not a chair and did that for a while. So I would, again, strongly recommend Mr. Larson as a candidate for that.
Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mayor.
That's fine. Let him speak.
No, I actually, come to think of it, doesn't make any difference. Thanks, boss. Good meeting.
Ms. Davis, do you want to say something?
Yes. I am supporting Mr. Allen, vice chair. He has been the vice chair at the trust fund for a number of years and has done, I think, a fairly good job being the vice chair of the trust fund. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your briefings continue, Mr. Mayor.
So we don't have another vote?
No. This concludes.
I thought you said there were two.
Well, ballots. You voted on the other board officers, and then the ballot vote was
I'm
the number
sorry.
Two.
I thought you said we had two ballots. Okay, thank my you. Bad. Okay, let us proceed with briefing number one on traffic lights.
And Forrest Turner is going to deliver that presentation.
So your first briefing this
morning. I'm sorry. We do have one more. I thought we did.
I apologize.
Thank you, Ms. Alonzo.
My apologies. Item number three is authorized settlement of the lawsuit filed Jimmy Eddie Williams versus City of Dallas, cost number 1107825.
We have any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you.
There we go. Now, Forrest.
All right. So your first briefing is a discussion of our traffic system upgrade needs, and we'll start with page three. So we thought it important to just discuss the traffic signals in relation to the street system itself. Our street system, as you can see there, is a system that contains a number of things: street striping, sidewalks, medians, all of the utilities that are underneath the street system. And you can see there that it's more than just the street system. Next slide. So the streets themselves, in 1995, the City Council set forth a program that was designed to take the streets from a poor condition and move them all to satisfactory condition by a certain goal. We call that program Streets 2015 back then, and it initially had a goal of 75% satisfactory. You can see we reached that goal. Each time the staff worked to reach that goal, the council improved it and set new levels. Next. So we think it's important to use the same approach as it relates to the traffic signals. The traffic signals are found at intersections, of course, on freeway ramps, major thoroughfares, and on some residential streets. And the benefits there, you can see there, that reduce accidents by allocating right-of-way and so on. Next slide. Again, these are all good benefits of having a strong traffic system, the accident reductions, reducing travel time to enhance mobility, and, of course, the economic benefits that go with it. We think all of those things are strong and important. Next. So it's important to talk about the history of Dallas as we begin to talk about some of our infrastructure needs, whether we're talking about water mains or wastewater mains. It's important to look at Dallas has sustained growth over a period between the 1940s and 90s. And you can see there that a significant number, 200 traffic signals, were built every decade during that growth period. So we're at a level of 1,400 traffic signals today. Next. Again, with those traffic signals, a number of them are aging.
they're working, but they are aging, and we think it important to talk about some of the problems or challenges that we have. 80% of those are at their useful life or beyond, which is 25 years, and a number of them are broken, so that requires quite a bit of maintenance to respond to them to make sure that they are working and in good order. A lot of the hardware is old, and the weather, just the varied weather that we get, heat, cold, rain, all of those things affect traffic signals. Next. The structural deficiencies of these things are quite just part of the program. If they're old, certainly most of them won't meet a lot of federal standards as it relates to operational issues, wind loading standards, and a number of things. A very important piece we want to make sure we address going forward is Americans with Disability Act requirements. So all of these issues are challenges that face us as it relates to our traffic signal system. Next. City has not had a traffic replacement program. Again, I mentioned that in 1995, the council adopted a program related to the streets, the surface. So now we're thinking that we want to take that same approach and have periodic upgrades to the system. You can see here we want to upgrade signals, improve the bulbs. We don't have a comprehensive program, and we think that's really important for a system that's at the age of Dallas's system. Next. We thought we'd show you on a chart just graphically how that looks, the current and future state of the traffic signals without a maintenance program. So with a maintenance program, again, as we move out into those years, we begin to see a system where the infrastructure is current and one that can be maintained properly. Next. Visually, these are some of the issues that we deal with when you have straight line winds, just any number of things that affect the signals. So you see these locations. I might point out on this Beckley at I-30, it's not only a problem when the signal itself falls, but we have to respond to take that power because these are still have power moving through them, and it's important that we respond to those. Next. And again, downtown, we thought we'd show that. Field and Main is one of our areas downtown. This was just last December. And I mentioned earlier the ADA, the Americans with Disability Compliance piece. Here's one of the controller boxes that are actually just located near a ramp. And as we move forward, we want to try to deal with these issues and come into compliance as it relates to that as well. Next. So we're going to go forward in two parts. We're going to go forward first with the actual central computer system. And that part I'll talk about in a second is already underway. And then the second part is the actual signals themselves. When we refer to signals, we're really talking about the traffic signal that you see and the vehicle detectors and also the controller box. All of those are sort of generically referred to as the signals. So part one I talked about, we have a program or initiative right now to upgrade the computer and communication system. The estimated cost is about $12.5 million. You see there the funding that we have identified. And when we worked on the budget last year, we talked about in the future budget that $1.3 million would be needed to complete the funding for this computer information system. Next. So we still need to do part two, and that's what we're here briefly talking about this morning. The signals themselves, the detectors. A detector in that middle lane is just referring to a way to have the signal know that a car is in an intersection, needs to make a left turn, for example, or proceed into traffic with the right-of-way. And you see the controller cabinet there. Next. So we thought it would be important to show you what the upgraded piece would look like. So new traffic signal, mast arms, where the signals are located. And then we want to move toward radar vehicle detection so that it will detect a car or a bike and be able to do that in a way without disturbing the pavement so that all of it is above ground and easy to maintain. Also, those controller cabinets are more modern and we'll be able to respond to system breakdowns quicker. Next. Moving forward, we want to consider a program that would replace about 60 traffic signals annually. This is sort of in line with the approach we took when we started the Streets 2015 program, again, to just identify how do you start to address that need in some systematic way, and this is our approach. begin to replace them, and then also have a maintenance system in place that, that keeps those systems operating without just replacing them and then wait for them to all the kind of need to be replaced again. Next. We just show you the comparison with a maintenance program without. This will be a theme that we'll bring forward on a number of topics, whether it's major maintenance or traffic signals or any of the programs that we have at the City of Dallas that require building of an infrastructure component as well as the maintenance that goes with it. So we think that cost here, we show you kind of over a 25-year period, is $196 million. That's an awful lot of money. Our estimated cost of 60 signals is about $10 million. We're not suggesting that that's the amount that will be considered in next year's budget, but we certainly want to be able to talk about that as a starting point and then balance that with other needs that we might have in next year's budget. Next. So we think and feel that we've put forth some strong reasons why we ought to upgrade. Traffic signal system is important. If it's aging, it requires maintenance, service calls to repair them often, and could be a potential increase for accidents. So all of these are strong reasons why we think we need to upgrade the system. So we summarize by saying we got 80% of the infrastructure that's past its life, and we think we need to get busy about repairing it, and we will begin to address those needs as we develop the budget for the upcoming fiscal year. And with that, any questions?
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I actually think this has been such a great week. We have had now, this is the second terrific public safety initiative that we've heard about. The first one was Monday from the fire department with their pilot program on community initiative related to ambulance calls and how they're going to start developing that, which is already funded in this year's budget. This is the second one. Now we have the traffic signal upgrades, which is something that we have needed for so long in this city. I mean, we think of this as an infrastructure improvement, as Mr. Turner said, but it's also a public safety improvement. Our street system and how our signals operate and the street striping and all of those components are a public safety issue. So I think this is terrific, and I am going to be totally supportive of this. And thank you, AC, for bringing this forward. I mean, this is a step-by-step over-the-years program, like we've done with our streets, to get rid of all the old traffic signals, upgrade them to this new system, and this is so important. And I, like I said, I'll be fully supportive. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Carraway.
I want to echo Ms. Grayson to say, you know, it is time to for this upgrade. It's duly needed, and I'm totally supportive of doing that. I'd like to see on some of the major walkways, that we have the signals with the little clock, that little time telling you, like we do downtown,
right,
telling you how much time you have to,
yes,
to actually cross those lights. It's duly needed. And I also want to take this moment to suggest, because in your presentation you mentioned about some streets and us fixing the streets. And I want y'all to write this down. Sutter, between Van Cleve and Keese, it is in need of repair as we approach that stoplight. Keese, where Olive Wonder Homes Middle School is, from Olive Wonder Homes to Lancaster, it is in deplorable condition. And Sunnyvale, from Overton up to Loop 12, those are major thoroughfares that as we repair the lights and things, these streets must be addressed, and they must be addressed next and as quick as possible in those priorities. Sunnyvale is long overdue, but Keese in front of the post office and before you get to Lancaster. We just put that in. I just want to take this note to officially make sure y'all know, go fix Sunnyvale, Keese, and Sutter. Thank you so very kindly. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Mr. Atkins.
Again, Forrest, you know, I understand that there is a cost of roughly about $10 million a year that over, I think it's page 20?
Mm-hmm.
Page 22. Okay, so So when we do our budget, so are we budgeting $10 million a year for over the next 25 years? Or how are we doing this budget?
So, no, what I'm looking to Mr. Gonzalez to talk about.
What we wanted to present today is, first of all, as we are looking to our following our next year's budget, there's a number of issues that we're wanting for the council to start early in taking a look at and consider what are the things that are very basic to the operation of this city that we need to be more aware of those needs. As was pointed out, this is one element of several that we will be pointing to in terms of buildings, the overall street conditions, and other infrastructure, which we will be pointing out some of the order of magnitude and a plan on how we might be able to address them in that future. This is not a day for decisions necessarily, but really as much as anything else to make the council aware that these are things that we'll need to be including in those future conversations as we set for this next budget.
Okay. And since we're saying the next budget, but is some of this cost is actual capital improvement could be on the bond package, on that future bond package? And I think that on looking at, you said over the next 25 years, I think that it should be, I would not be here the next 25 years, but on the sense that if we're going to do a bond package in 2018 or 2020, how much you can roll that into the bond package, it would take off our debt service. So I would love to see that done in this presentation. It don't show that.
That's correct. But it is something that, as you're saying, needs to be considered as part of that bond program development in the future. So that these costs, along with others, would be part of that consideration.
Okay. And also, account with Mr. Carraway, I guess all 14 districts probably saying that when you replace these 60 signaling, where would it be replaced first? I mean, how are you prioritizing those 60?
Right. So
I mean, how are they going to be prioritized? Tell me, how are we going to do it? Are we going to do it by the street? We're going to grade all the street that we got?
We envision it. Yeah, this is a good question, and we sort of anticipated someone might ask that.
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons why we use the Streets 2015 as the sort of a sample. That program takes the city, it divides it into the 14 council districts, looks at the condition, and then sets out a plan to deal with it across those districts. We envision kind of the same approach for
this. We have not done that yet.
We have not.
When will you do that?
So we will. We're working on that as we speak.
The reason why I said because it's going to affect the next year budget.
That's right.
So we should know.
You're correct. The same approach for all of those needs that Mr. Gonzalez referred to. We will look at the needs and then build a program that would address across the city all 14 districts.
Okay. Again, we don't know when, though, right?
Well,
I'm very time conscious.
Right.
I guess, AC, when would staff would know those sixes, lights, when they're going to be changed, what district? So we would know because we might have some streets that say, hey, this street might need to be done in my district. And Sandy might say she has a street in her district, might need a signal light. And the general might have some there. But we should at least have an update, just like that streets is graded A, B, C, D, and E. When would we know? Since we're trying to do our budget, because we still are talking about the budget first part of next year, and that's just around the corner.
Well, first of all, let's make sure there's a signalization on the computer software side that we're rolling out. That we can have some information within the next month or so about how that rollout of that component, which is in the current budget, is going to be implemented. The second part with regards to the overall system, in terms of the actual physical signals themselves, that is something that would be developed at the time we identify funding. And that's going to be considered in the following year's budget. That's not something we would have right immediately because we don't know what funding level we're really dealing with.
So therefore, the $10 million is not the level that we think. We think about $10 million, but it could be $5 million.
That's $4 million.
Depends on the budget.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that is exactly the point that we're trying to get to is we wanted to show you the order of magnitude as we get into the budget and we start discussing priorities and what, how we're going to be making, how you all are going to be making decisions with regards to this and other needs throughout the city, then that would be adjusted accordingly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Forrest, can you go back to the slide? What does 75% satisfaction mean with regard to streets?
Well, again, let's go back to that slide. So when we started this program in 95, the street conditions overall were at 62% satisfactory rating, meaning that 62% of the streets were
C grade.
C or better, right? And so the original goal in 1995 was 75%, right? So in 1999, that goal was achieved, right? So we got to that goal, and then the city council at that time said, okay, so we're there. Now we need to set a new goal and keep moving.
The reason I ask is that, well, first of all, I think probably council and the public want to know that satisfaction doesn't mean we think you're satisfied with the streets. That's certainly not what it means. It means that on the city's rating scale, 75% of the streets are rated satisfactory.
That's
meaning
correct.
A C grade, meaning not all that great. But the reason I ask the question is, aren't we at 72%?
No, we're greater than 72%. In fact, we're working on a briefing to brief the full council on the overall citywide index for the streets. So we're not at 72. We're considerably above that.
That's really good news. And the reason I thought it was 72 is because when I was on the bond steering committee last year, the number that we got from the city was 72, and we were sent out into the community to say, you need to vote for this $300 million streets package in order to maintain 72%, or we were going to fall off.
Well, I'll apologize for the city as a whole. It's not 72. It's,
okay.
Well, it's higher than that. And so, yes, it is higher, and we're developing a briefing to brief the council on just that.
Is Streets ISO 9001 certified?
Yes, it is.
Is this program of you know, strategic planning for maintenance a result of going through that certification process?
So no, it's not. The program for Streets 2015 began, and as I said, in 1995. I think in 2004 is when the street department sort of was the first department to just go off on this quality initiative. So.
Oh, and I actually am being confusing. I needed to clarify. The maintenance program you're proposing for the signals, did that result from any ISO 9001 activities for certification?
I'm looking to our engineer, and they're all nodding yes, because you may know that the traffic division used to be a part of Public Works. When it moved to Streets, the discussion was, let's get this division quality, certified, and they identified this as something that ought to be a major component of that.
Okay. So is that essentially signals moved into Streets from code, right?
From Public Works.
From Public Works.
Yes.
So I guess I'm trying to get to, it seems like ISO 9001, which is supposed to guarantee that we have metrics in place to do future maintenance and undertake other efficiency considerations, would have turned this up earlier. Is that just the result of it got moved into your department and this is the first time you had a chance to take a crack at it?
Well, no, I think the issue has been there for some time. It's just not a new issue. It's just a matter of we're coming out of a recession and now we're talking about adding funding, and it's a good time to be looking at those needs across the board. Traffic, I'm trying to hit all the ones you just mentioned, street conditions, all of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
all of our buildings.
Yeah. What I'm getting at is, you know, is how did you come to understand that this was going to be important? Why now? Why not earlier?
Well, I think again, your question is why now, and it's really a matter of was there going to be funding? It certainly wouldn't have made business sense to bring it forward when there wasn't going to be funds available for it. So, Mr.
Well, I guess the why now is, as Forrest was saying, there's been discussion about these things and from staff for a good while. As he also said, we had gone through a number of years where there was significant cutbacks in our maintenance program. Those cutbacks are being felt in a number of different ways. We're hopefully now in a different part of the cycle. We felt it appropriate to start briefing the council about how we might be needing to do things differently in view of those larger changes.
Well, and that's really good information, AC, and I really want to applaud you for a renewed focus on infrastructure. It's long been my opinion that the city is basically crippling its economic development platform by not maintaining its infrastructure. Private developers don't invest when the streets are falling apart. But the thing I wanted to ask you was, I thought we had talked earlier about moving all of streets and transportation kind of into a comprehensive management and budgeting process. Will this be part of that process?
You want to speak to that?
So, yes, so the answer is yes, we are doing that. One of the issues that came up was striping. So part of that discussion led us to decide that or agree that you all were correct and that the bike striping, all of that should be dealt with from the transportation component. And that happened, and we did that. We made that move. This allows streets to be able to focus on the roadway and the signals that are above them. So I would agree with you and say that we actually took that advice and direction and did that.
Well, I think it's going to be really important in terms of creating a transparent budget and one that we can actually stick to. What we noticed with the bike plan, for instance, is that by having a separate budget, it was really easy not to fund it. And we wouldn't want to not fund a public safety concern like this. So maybe it'd be worthwhile, AC, once you have that management and budgeting structure in place, that we bring it to budget, audit, and finance and just take a look at it. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, the effort here is to try to highlight a number of areas in infrastructure, give them some visibility, and as we go through the rest of the process, we're open to suggestions with regards to how that might be made more obvious to everybody about what is being what needs to be invested, and then how those allocations would actually be executed on once we got a program.
Well, and I think you're saying exactly what I'm wanting to hear, which is you're going to give us the components of what you need, and then at some point you're going to give us a more comprehensive picture of what the transportation budget needs to be.
Correct.
Okay, I think that's really a good way to go about
it. Now, I would want to agree with both of you all in terms of the previous, what Ms. Grayson had talked about. This is really something about public safety as well as economic development, because people actually get hurt when these signals are not working correctly, and people do not invest in the community if they see things not working as they should. So it's both.
Thank you very much. This looks like a good initiative.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Forrest.
Yes.
And currently, I think you said we do have funds for maintenance, and
yes,
we are doing maintenance.
We do.
And I need to put a street in your mind, and that's Gus Thomason and Ferguson, please. Because you're a lot of the poles out there, you're seeing the old yellow coming back on a lot of them.
Okay.
So anyway, I appreciate you looking at that.
Okay.
And then I wanted to ask you about page 17. And where do you plan on, and are you okay? You're moving forward currently, right, with the new computer?
That's correct.
Communication system.
That's correct. We're moving forward and it's underway. We wanted to show you the estimated cost of $12.5 million.
Right.
And also, as I said in last, as we were working on the current budget that we're in last year, we made mention that the $1.3 million at the bottom is something that we want to try to get funded, and it's a priority. But other than that, we're moving forward with this computer system.
Then on, where do you plan on getting your $1.3 million in 2014?
So
will
our
it be bond fund?
Well, at this point, it would be either general fund or we could apply for grants. We don't want to box ourselves in. It's really one of those issues where, as long as it's funded, you can see there we use bond funds, grant funds, and of course general fund.
But I mean, we've got funds to move forward.
Yes,
until
we do.
We need that $1.3 million.
Yes.
Okay. Then this total system and components should be in by the end of 2016.
That's correct.
Are there going to be other funds needed after 2015, 14, and 15? Or is this the final funding for that system?
After the system is installed, the maintenance budget for streets would be the maintaining portion.
Purpose. That's right. Okay, and then on the $60 million a year that you were talking about.
Well, that's part two.
The 60 lights.
Right, that's part two.
Right. Those fundings will come from where?
Again, we haven't identified where just yet. What we're doing is discussing the need and giving the cost.
Possibly be part of the budget?
Yes, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, agree this is a great program, and I particularly like slide 21. I think that's helpful with regards to when you're looking with budgeting to look at what you put in, because would you not say it costs less to keep maintenance up than having to repair at the end of a life?
That's very true.
Right. So that's helpful, because when we're looking at spending, we're actually not just looking at expenses, but we're looking at future savings if it's not going to be replaced. So I know it sounds like a big amount of money to put into maintenance. But with regards to the new system or the new lights that go in, I'm particularly interested in the effect it will have on traffic flow. Are we going to get some of that increased traffic flow with the program, with the new computer program, or we have to wait for the new lights to get that to take effect?
A combination. Some improvements with the computerized program, but the real benefit is when you replace the signals themselves so that you can get the right signals in place to, for example, the flashing yellow for the caution left
right.
turn. This won't. The computer system won't give us that. You don't get that until you put in the new fixtures.
Okay, but we will get some maybe traffic with just the computer.
That is
so when you're evaluating what lights were going to be replaced and you're looking at the age of the actual equipment, will you also look at areas that have traffic congestion as part of that?
Yes.
So that will help solve.
Okay.
I would encourage that. I mean, I know I have old lights in my district, but I also know I have a lot of congestion related at certain times of the day that, if the signals were coordinated more effectively.
Okay. So,
all right. Those are my points. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Mayor. This is great. I think this is a forward thinking, really, in management, I guess, by walking around to go out and find out what the problems are and then try to address those. And I recognize we haven't had the funds in the past, but going forward as those monies are located, I think it's great. How many LED lights do we have installed now? Any?
So I'm getting a signal that we don't have. I'm sorry?
Traffic signals on the street. We've done that on the street.
In fact, it's time to do it again. It's time to kind of put in the new light bulbs. It's been 7 years, so.
Okay, and what about the signal lights? Any update on that?
Well, that's what we're talking about.
Okay, none of those have gone to LED.
The traffic signals have gone to the LED. We did that.
Tell me what's the difference.
So the traffic signals, the red, green, yellow, those were changed out about 7 years ago. They only last about 7 years. It's time to do that again and rebulb everything. The street lights, so the kind of the white or the orange glow lights, those really have not been changed.
That's
we're
right.
still evaluating the technology. We're beginning to play with them, and we're looking at putting some of them in place, maybe along Great Trinity Forest Way and some areas along the Trinity as kind of a prototype. Now, the park department has used the LED lights in some of their parking lots, and, of course, we've got them in the City Hall parking garage.
Those probably wouldn't last as long, I wouldn't think, since they're on all night.
But they're supposed to last
still
that long. So they're still supposed to last longer than the current ones, which is the advantage, is one of the advantages of them.
And I would just like to put into the hat Forest about Buckner Boulevard is something a priority area because it's obviously a state highway and we get 40,000, 45,000 cars per day there, and every time we have a rainstorm, you know, the signal lights fail at the major intersections. Some of those have been replaced, reworked, but we still have had some shutdowns, and it causes a massive traffic problem, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. particularly at Bruton and Buckner. And some I know have been replaced, and right. I don't know which ones those are, but I know we still have some stoppages there.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan. Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. Couple of quick questions. My colleagues have covered a number of good things. Assuming AC and Forrest, this is one in a series of upcoming maintenance briefings we're going to be seeing for other projects throughout the city, EBS,
yes, sir.
Streets, sewers, water. Okay. So well, we're all very excited to see this happening with signals. We've probably got a few more of these to consider for next year's budget. So everybody can come and think about that. I noticed on this particular one, on slide 22, where it talks about 60 signal light program is $10 million annually, and you know, if I do the math on that, that's like $166,000 per signal light program. So what does a signal light program involve? Is that an entire intersection?
Yes, okay. Yes. It's looking at each intersection as you move down a major thoroughfare, and so there are four directions. It also is a factor of the number of lanes on that major thoroughfare. So, yes, you're mm-hmm. correct.
So it's obviously a pretty expensive program. The other thing I just want to mention, and it's kind of a pet peeve of mine even since my park board days, is using the bond program to address deferred maintenance. So while I see an opportunity for us to maybe do a little catch-up in the next bond program, I think your proposal here to have an annual program at this part of our general fund could hopefully keep us from having to do these big bond catch-ups and where we're just fixing deferred maintenance issues. So I appreciate us thinking forward on long-term maintenance. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. Forrest, a couple questions. I'm going to talk about first the traffic lights. Do we have or have we looked at other cities around the country to see what type of new design and traffic lights?
Yes. Yes. So to elaborate, we look for best practices. We look at the cities that have populations sort of like Dallas mm-hmm. and the traffic issues that we have. So, yeah, that's part of our engineering group to continuously look at that. Yes.
And when we I guess when we talk about this again, can you have a list or a picture of new street light traffic design lights mm-hmm. from around the country?
Okay.
Because some of the lights, and I've mm-hmm. gone to other places where the lights, the green is real bright.
Yes.
Or the yellow is real, real bright, you know, or the red is just, you know, and it has stop in the middle of the red or...
Yes.
Go or warning in the middle. It's something that can, you know, as you try to redevelop a neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
lights that can also fit in with the design of an urban neighborhood as you're trying to design them. Do we have any type of, have anybody done any type of new traffic design and lighting?
Well, that's, Jill was here talking to you about as the engineer, but this, we talk about that quite often. Jill, if you...
Have anybody come up with new designs in traffic lighting besides the old ones that we have? Something that is, when you're going through a transformation like I'm trying to go through in my neighborhood and you want to add something that can make the neighborhood look different than what it is through a traffic light, have y'all looked at anything like that?
We've looked at some alternatives just briefly. Mm-hmm. For example, at Love Field, there's a one light there that has a flashing strobe white light in it mm-hmm. that accentuates, I think that was in a red, and that's kind of the first one. You all have also seen pictures of the traffic signals that incorporate bike signals, so it has a little signal off mm-hmm. to the side mm-hmm. so that when we start getting major cross movements between bikes and cars, that's an element too. One of the things that we can also do as we look at urban design standards is look at alternative styles of the traffic signal pole itself.
Right.
So, for example, downtown, you know, downtown, the old ones that at the time I'm sure were cutting edge and really cool, but they were that kind of the square look, mm-hmm. like rectangles, mm-hmm. and that was meant as a design element just for downtown to make it special. You know, that could be incorporated into urban design districts elsewhere, right. Or we could just keep going with kind of a standard model of streetlights to keep our expenses down.
And that's what I'm more interested in. Like if the streetlight or the signal light says walk, the person is like in a video walking, so you know that you can walk out. Something that as the neighborhood changes and things are happening, something that's kind of different.
Well, and you've brought up a really big point that we've not paid a lot of attention to, which is all the ADA kind of accessories that go with modern traffic signals, mm-hmm. where you have an audio voice telling you, you know, walk now for this street, mm-hmm. Or blinking for the deaf. And there are some really very elaborate systems for ADA purposes that we really have not taken advantage of here.
And let me talk about light poles, too. There are places in the country, and I've looked them, that the poles are not the way they are here.
Right.
Well, you don't have to paint them for the next 75 years. In Europe, for example, certain parts of Europe, those poles, they got them where you don't have to paint them. They last long. And so I think we need to...
Yeah.
To look at that as well. In the LED, there are LEDs that are much brighter than the LEDs that we have now. Is it a cost to LEDs from bright to brightest?
Well, I think at this point what you're seeing is the decline in the LEDs. They're kind of reaching their age, and so some of the individual little diode kind of things are not working anymore, and so mm-hmm. you're seeing a less intense light coming out of them as a result of the age, because they're beginning to kind of burn out. And that's one reason why we need to have a program to replace those bulbs.
And so I guess as we talk about traffic signs, more so something that can also make a neighborhood look good on a main thoroughfare, urban neighborhoods, light poles that you don't have to paint, because on MLK, for example, those light poles have been there for so long, you guys had to repaint them to
right.
just kind of spruce up that street.
Right.
But something that you don't have to, and other type of lighting, besides a light pole, what are some other type of lighting that can go on a major thoroughfare that can also help enhance with the light poles that you already have there?
Well, you know, there's the pedestrian lighting that can mm-hmm. really add to a street,
mm-hmm.
In addition to the street lights themselves, and then you can have artistic lighting that, you know, in different places.
Let me ask you, is there a conference on lighting, like for street lights and light poles? They got a water conference. Is there a light conference where people come together and talk about different lighting elements in urban settings?
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know that we've taken advantage of it, but I'm sure that there's things like that.
Okay. If you can find out if there's a, and I don't know, it might not be, is there some type of task force on lighting?
Mm-hmm.
And I would think it would be, since we're talking neighborhoods, there's a task force on, just like we have a bike task force, we might need to, far as put together a task force on traffic, street lighting, and street poles.
Well, Public Works is working on a briefing for you all dealing with the types of changes that we need to make to really have good, complete streets. We've had practices over the years of how we do pavers and
mm-hmm.
practices of how we've done street lights
mm-hmm.
and pedestrian lights. And, you know, our philosophy has always been to keep O&M costs as low as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that might be penny wise and pound foolish when it comes to certain kinds of districts where we want to promote vitality and economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're preparing a briefing for you all to examine our different policies related to how we build and operate streets. And these kinds of things that you're talking about, of alternative street lights, alternative lighting levels, alternative landscaping, bollards, street furniture, we're going to be bringing that briefing to you all at the first of the year, because we need to really examine our principles and determine if we want to continue in the same kind of philosophy and policy that we've had traditionally, or do we want to make changes, and if so, what are those changes and for what circumstances?
And the other thing, when you bring, and if we go this route, is it saving us money long term?
And it, again, it could be that it impacts our O&M budget, but it may promote better, more property revenues coming in the other way. So it might be, you know, coming out of one pocket and going in a different pocket. So.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. I will, Jill, you might want to stay up there, because I'm glad Ms. Davis was asking those questions. I'm going to take it from a little bit different point of view. I think it's great that we're looking long term. Best I know, the world changes in every 2 years these days. I mean, as I just saw a wonderful Tom Friedman speech about how it's changed in the last 10 years. What are we assuming the state of the art on technology is going to be like as we deal with this issue? I mean, where are we, you know, on the curve? I heard some of the answers on the kind of the little tactical things, but I mean, is America going to use street lights the same way as they're using them, you know, in 10 years from now? That sort of thing.
And I think ultimately the answer is no. What we'll see is kind of integration across things. We've already begun to think through how we have traffic cameras along our major corridors. Well, the police department has cameras for public safety. So we have two sets of cameras. Why do we have two sets? Could one set work? How do we transmit data and Wi-Fi? And so our CIS department is, you know, researching the concepts from what's called smart cities and really looking at what's the new kind of technology that's going to bridge traffic with public safety, with parking control, with how we deliver drainage and those kinds of things. So we're at the kind of beginning edge. We're looking at those things and examining them.
I know, for instance, we can set centrally change how traffic lights work, timing of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point, that needs to be virtually done.
Right.
I mean, because you sit at traffic lights all over this town, okay? I know we're not up to date on what the traffic flows are happening, because they're changing when
well, the sensors aren't working, and that's part of this program,
exactly,
to change them out.
So to me, I'm with the rest of the council. I'm excited about this. I'm not excited about moving forward unless we have a vision for smart cities with this, because we will be spending money behind bad technology.
Right.
But this is a perfect time to kind of is the inflection point. We're going to have to invest. So now let's really invest smartly so we can build something for the next two decades.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Grayson. Yeah, Ms. Grayson, I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask one or two follow-up questions. One was maybe Jill. I don't know. I think it was she who mentioned strobe lights. Can you tell me a little bit more about the use of strobe lights?
They're used in at intersections where they're pretty dangerous. You might have high speed coming in, or you get, in the case of Love Field, you have a lot of pedestrians crossing, and you had two flows of cars trying to come together with pedestrians. And so the strobe is embedded in the light. It's embedded in the red, And it's not all of the reds. You know, traffic signals will typically be, you know, multiple heads across the street and multiple reds within the same traffic head. But one of them will have a real brilliant white strobe, and just, you know, our eyes react to motion, and it's a real fast, and you see it, and like, oh, it's red.
Don't we have ordinances against the use of strobe lights?
Well, I don't know if it's, this is the same kind of thing, but these are strobe lights embedded in the traffic signal. Next time you drive out to Love Field.
Aren't there health effects on some people from looking at strobe lights?
Yeah.
Isn't that dangerous?
If you were to stare at it, but I don't think anybody would be there long enough.
I'm really surprised. I don't necessarily think that's a good idea. I'm thinking, I don't know, don't epileptics react to strobe lights? Don't migraine people who get migraines, aren't they triggered
by things
like strobe lights?
Well, they can, but that's why there's only one.
Well, it only takes one. I'm just surprised. I'm surprised, and I don't know that I think it's a good idea. I wanted to ask a question about streets. Forrest, when we grade streets, and we grade them as to the condition of the pavement and whether the pavement is worn down and whether the joints are, you know, out of kilter,
Right. What
do you do about a street that has a washboard effect? Is that taken into consideration when we grade the streets?
Yes. So your colleague sitting to your left has a street that's, while evaluating it right now, that has the washboard effect. The reality is, it is just what you said, a joint that's blown, and the segments have shifted, and we take a maintenance approach to see about milling down that street so that it can be used. But the real fix is to reconstruct those streets, and of course reconstruction is quite expensive.
So expensive.
Yes.
But since you mentioned milling down, and I'm talking about when you're on the lane of traffic, it's bumpy.
I'm assuming you're going to give me the name of the street.
I am, and I wasn't going to talk about this until some of my colleagues mentioned streets, but
right.
That would be Coit Road between Campbell and the George Bush.
As duly noted, Midway and Coit both will be addressed.
Because I was shocked when I asked for a grade assessment of that street and I was given a B or a C.
Right.
And it didn't seem to take into account the washboard effect.
And that gets back to Mr. Gonzalez's point about the maintenance. So the street is built and it's, you know, it's there, but from time to time, you know, as in homes, it shifts around. And so you have to do something to maintain it, and that's part of that.
Okay, and then I'm going to finish with, as we're talking about addressing different areas in the city of infrastructure maintenance and improvement, and I am all in favor of this idea that we do this in stages, as you're suggesting, for our streetlights. I want to say the word alleys, and we need to look at alleys with a similar type of program, AC.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Just for the record, I'm not cranking. I'm letting people get off the topic of traffic signals because it's a briefing meeting, okay?
That's exactly why I did it, Mayor. It's a briefing meeting.
I think it's okay to talk about these things in the briefing when we get over there. It's tougher. All right. Next issue, gas drilling ordinances.
Yes, sir. Teresa O'Donnell will make that presentation. Yes. She was supposed to have police escort.
Ms. Rios was going to, Teresa, Ms. Rios is going to update us on one thing.
We have the results of the ballot vote for the vice chair to the South Dallas Fair Park Development Fund Board. The individual receiving 10 of the 15 votes was Gerald Larson, so he is duly appointed as vice chair.
Thank you. Good morning. Are you signaling me, AC? Am I? Okay. Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm going to go through the briefing with you this morning. I am admittedly not the expert on this, but we do have a number of experts in the room. Ms. Lois Finkelman, who chaired our task force, is here with us this morning. Thank you for being here, Ms. Finkelman. And then David Cosman and Tammy Palmino, who have been the primary staff people working this through the task force and the planning commission. And the staff members from OEQ, I think, will be joining us here in just a minute. We've heard from our speakers a little bit this morning, but I think it's important to go over the background because this is a highly technical issue that we've had a lot of discussion and debate and information on over the last few years. And I want to just make sure everybody understands that there is a gas drilling ordinance in place today. We've had one since 2007. Clearly in 2007 when we put that together, we didn't have as much knowledge and information and expertise as we do today, but it did provide a very solid foundation, and that's the ordinance that we've relied on the SUPs that we have already approved. There have been five approved, but there's no drilling in Dallas. Even though we've approved some SUPs today, there's no drilling in Dallas. Back in 2011, a number of applications started to be processed. We started to hear from environmentalists and residents about their concerns, and it was clearly, you know, time to refresh that 2000 ordinance and take a look at it and see what new information we'd gain from the experience that we had, primarily from our sister cities to the west. So in June of 2011, Mayor Dwayne Carraway at the time, got that ball rolling and asked Ms. Finkelman to chair a task force that was appointed by the City Council. That task force, I think it's important to note, was a highly skilled task force. Ms. Finkelman chaired it. Ms. Wong was the Park Board representatives. We had three industry representatives from the business. We also had three subject matter experts, professors and people that are scientists and in the field, and then three citizens that are environmental representatives. So it was really a very highly qualified task force. Go ahead, Donna. That task force met 22 times over the span of about 8 months. Ms. Finkelman did not give them a summer break. They worked all through the summer. And we had a number of high-level presentations. You can find the specifics of that in your appendix, but we got presentation from the EPA, from the Texas Railroad Commission, the TCEQ, the cities of Fort Worth, city of Grand Prairie, and then some industry and environmentalists gave their perspective also. So those were the nine topic meetings. So, again, very weighty, very in-depth discussion. They also scheduled a field trip out to Arlington to look at some drilling and production sites. They held two public hearings to receive public comment. And then they started the arduous process of 10 workshops to really debate and discuss the merits of the ordinance. In May of 2012, Ms. Finkelman briefed the City Council on the task force recommendations, and then it was turned over to the CPC, who began their work. CPC, as you can see, also met 8 times, held public hearings, and then their recommendations were forwarded to Council in September. So go ahead, Donna. This is a map that shows, and it's a little bit dated. It's January 2011. But what it shows is the gas drilling in the north central Texas region. You can see that there are, at that time, 13,000 wells in the region, primarily west of us. But again, I want to reiterate that there have been no wells drilled in Dallas, none today. From the map, you can see Fort Worth and some of our sister cities have a lot of experience in this field. They've been doing it for a while, so we did rely on their expertise quite a bit. Okay, next slide. And then just kind of briefly about this, kind of the geology and the gas drilling production itself. First, let me say that this slide is a little misleading. Well, it's
It is misleading in that there's a comment here that says impenetrable rock. Well, clearly it's penetrable because it was penetrated, but, you know, when they drilled the well and put the casing in. And that this is important because it's this failure right here that is the center of a lot of the environmentalists and staff concerns. But what this slide is meant to convey is this Barnett Shale is deep. It's deep, and the relationship to the aquifer is very deep. You have to go down about 7,000 feet to hit this shale rock. This is where the gas is down here. But is this casing and this column sometimes experiences failure? So we heard quite a bit about that. Next slide. Then horizontal drilling. We've heard about horizontal drilling. Once it's down, then you can go horizontally. So you can see these drills will go out horizontally, and they can go out, up to a mile. The average in the Barnett Shale is about 3,600 feet. And then the next slide shows you about fracking. So that's also a very intense and controversial part of this production. Fracking is when water and sand and chemical mixture is forced down into this shale. The water is compressed, and it's forced down into this shale rock so that the rock does indeed fracture. That's why they call it fracking. They fracture the rock, and it allows the gas to escape and be collected up through the rock, released through the rock. So the next couple of slides, I'll talk about this kind of phases of the gas drilling and production process. It's not just one thing, as you can see here. There are several phases, the site prep, the drilling, the fracturing, production, and then reworking and refracking, and then reclamation. I don't want to oversimplify it, so if you do have questions, let me know, and we'll get you an answer. But this slide is intended to, some of these are just Google Earth images because we wanted aerial photos so that you could kind of see into the site. So what you're seeing here is the initial site work. Site's cleared, and it's prepared for this heavy industry to take place, right? So it's cleared, and the drill rig is assembled. So those are the kind of initial phases. The new drill rig is brought in. Now, drilling is kind of the busiest part of the operation where you see all the activity going on. And each well is drilled separately. So they'll bring this rig in, and they'll drill a well there. And then it might move over here, and they'll drill a well there, and it might move over here. Some of the SUPs that you've entertained have had as many as 20 wells on a single pad site. So it's not, I don't want to mislead anybody into thinking it's this one operation and then it's over. There can be multiple wells drilled there. And then the next, so then you move it, once it's drilled, then you move into this fracking phase, and that's where this high-pressure water and sand and chemical mixture is forced down into that. And so, again, this is certainly the most intensive part of the process. There's a lot of truck traffic here, lots of water coming into and out of the site. So this is a very intense part of it. And then once the fracking's been done and the well's in production, then a lot of this... Go ahead, Don. Thank you. Then the site, this is kind of what the site looks like after the drilling and the fracking, and it's in production. That's kind of what you're left with. This is, you'll hear it referred to as a Christmas tree, and you can see the storage tanks here. But this is what the site could potentially look like. Now, wells can be refracked and reworked, so that equipment will come back. But generally, once that initial phase is done, this is what the site's going to look like. At that point, the impacts of the site are going to be truck traffic. There's still going to be water that's produced that's going to have to be hauled away from the site. Okay. So that's a very quick overview, but let's get to the recommendations. First, I think it's important to note that Dallas has elected to govern gas drilling in two ways, through an SUP, through zoning, and through a very extensive permitting process. Some cities will rely on one or the other, but we elected to do both. So Fort Worth only has a permitting process. They don't go through an SUP process. They build all their requirements into the permit. Dallas is doing both. So the city council gets an opportunity to look at every site individually. That's important to note. The task force and the zoning committee's city plan commission's recommendations are, the vast majority of them are in complete agreement. So I just want to go through some of the key differences here. But I think it's important to remember that, let me see if I'm on the same slide you're on. Yes, that the city council sees each of these individually. So you all are familiar with SUPs. You do SUPs very regularly in your afternoon sessions. You know that there are specific conditions that you can attach to each of those approvals that relate to the particular location and the impact that those might have. In addition to that, there are some factors built in for the location and the potential impact for environmentally significant areas. Some things like the escarpment, and there's a definition of that. So that gives you the ability to look at that specifically. It also gives you the ability to look at drilling and production in parks. Part of that is a Chapter 26 determination that whether or not that use is appropriate for parkland. Now, that's just a majority. This slide was a little confusing, I think, for me, and it might be for you. So a Chapter 26 hearing is going to be required if you're in parkland, regardless of where in the process. The Plan Commission's recommendation was to require this Chapter 26 determination before they could submit the SUP application. So that's important to know. But the timing of that has been specified. And would require a three-quarter vote of the council to approve on the parkland, not the Chapter 26. The Chapter 26 determination is just a majority vote. But once the council makes that determination and it comes forward in the SUP, then at that point the SUP would be the three-quarter vote. Okay. So one aspect that received a considerable amount of time was this question of what is a protected use and what is the minimum spacing, the minimum required spacing from that. What's the minimum safe distance from that requested use, from that protected use? So if many of you are familiar with our use charts, and there's like 35 pages of use charts in the zoning ordinance. So it actually went through and looked at all those uses. Residential, yes, absolutely. Residential needs to be a protected use. And both the task force and the CPC went through all the lists. And you can see these change somewhat. But so office, the task force said 10,000 square feet. Planning Commission said no, all office, regardless of how big that office is, all office should be a protected use. So we've gone through the use charts. Recreation, yes, it's a should be a protected use when it's operated as a public park. And this is where the Plan Commission, they agreed on that to be allowed as a three-quarter vote by council, and this is where they said, that has to be preceded by the Chapter 26. And then we get into the spacing requirements. This is where the biggest difference is, and I think one of the speakers addressed this already this morning. The current ordinance requires a minimum of 300 feet. That's not unusual. We do that. Now you can go anything beyond that, but you can't reduce that less than 300 feet. The task force recommendation was for 1,000 feet and allow the council to reduce that down to 500 feet by a three-quarter vote of the city council. Okay? The CPC increased that 1,000 to 1,500 and then allowed that to be brought back down to 1,000 by a three-quarter vote. That is probably the biggest difference between the two recommendations of the task force and the CPC. Okay. So some other provisions that are in the ordinance that have to do with the distance requirement. Say I'm a property owner and I own 20 acres and that's my farm or my family, and I want to drill on my property. it requires a 1,000-foot separation. But there's this exception so that if it's your property, you live there, and you want to drill and on your own property, the council can waive that with a 3/4 vote. But regardless, there would have to be at least a 300-foot separation from the operation and any habitable structure. So even if it's your property, you want to drill on your property, your house is next door to it, a habitable structure. We're not including garages or sheds, but a habitable structure would still have to be at least 300 feet away. Other recommendations. Now, we're still in the zoning SUP period. So recommendation that there are neighborhood meetings and lots of public notification. The requirement that within 60 days of filing the application, not when it comes to council, but 60 days after filing the application, that they send notice to all the property owners with mailing addresses. Now, some of you know that we do the last certified tax roll, but this is everyone with a mailing address within 2,000 feet, and provide information on the drilling and the operation and how to sign up for the electronic notification and some other things. It also created a new use in the zoning ordinance that identifies gas line compressors as a use that's only allowed by SUP and IM districts. Okay, so that's the zoning. That's the things that the council is looking at when these applications come before the city council. Now, let's say you have your SUP approved. If it's approved by council, you'll have all the conditions that the council deemed appropriate. And in addition to that, now they go to the permitting sides. Now they're over at BI trying to get a permit, talking to the gas inspector. And these are some of the things that have to be submitted in order to do that. First thing, we require quite a bit of baseline sampling and testing. We have to do with air quality, soil sampling, noise levels, water, the water quality around wells in the area, and initial gas allowance analysis. Noise, there's some pretty significant restrictions on noise. It limits the amount of noise and enforces some mitigation measures like noise blankets, those big giant blankets that are about 30 feet tall, and then noise monitoring. That'll be required as part of the permit. It has some hours of operation limitations, basically limits the activities to daytime hours, and for truck deliveries and that type of thing. It requires all of the MSDS sheets. Now, that's typically for the fire department. They're going to be very concerned with the chemicals that are on site and how they're stored and maintained. But the permit requires those to all be maintained on site. There's a lot of safety and prevention requirements, like spill prevention and tracking, to make sure that there's a spill prevention plan, that there are devices and mechanisms in place that guard against potential spills. And then if they do, hopefully not, they won't, but if they do have a spill, some reporting requirements and to make sure that we know about that. We do have something kind of unique to our ordinance, which we haven't seen in other ordinances, this tagging additive to be added to the fracking fluid so you can identify where that comes from. Okay. So other requirements for site maintenance, basically these ensure that the site can't become a storage yard for the operator. We don't want a lot of stuff on site. We want a clean site. And then some regulations that regulate motors and engines. We're requiring electric motors when that it's at all feasible, just because of the diesel from the fumes from diesel engines impact the air quality quite a bit. Okay. Emissions, these can minimize the vapor releases. Again, there's another important clause that if a site does receive two or more notices, violations from TECQ, that they have to submit an emissions compliance plan. So, again, a lot of information. Seismic regulations. This really, we were seeing people go in to do seismic and clear-cutting quite a bit of trees, so we wanted to prevent that, and requiring a pipeline permit. Okay.
So those are the kind of the big issues that really speak specifically to the zoning and the permitting process. Now, in addition to that, the CPC raised some issues that they would like the council to consider. One is the use of water, and we've heard some of this, that the water used in fracking doesn't return to the natural cycle. And should DWU consider that water use during their drought contingency plan? Should the council kind of direct that? Now, that's a whole other separate discussion that certainly could absorb a lot of time, but that is something that the CPC recommended that the city council really take under advisement and think about. The next one was this idea of having our own air pollution offset program with the EPA and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. That, again, could be a very elaborate process that we haven't dealt with under the context of this ordinance. And then the last was this idea of a letter of credit for uninsurable acts. And I can tell you this is something I know nothing about, but our risk management professionals do. So if council has questions about that. Again, those are these kind of tangential issues, really not incorporated in the ordinance or the SUP, but things that we need to be thinking about. And then finally, drilling in the floodplain. Now, right now, drilling in the floodplain is prohibited. Some people will take a statement like that to mean that it's prohibited. But we do have floodplain regulations that allow you to remove land from the floodplain. And there's this kind of debate about whether the process of removing the land from the floodplain so that you can drill on it, that may indeed be more disruptive than allowing drilling in the floodplain. So again, that's a big issue that the council will need to consider at some point. So, all right, so next steps. So we're here to answer questions today, get your input and feedback about this. You are not being asked to vote on an ordinance today. The ordinance can be prepared for action on December 11th, at which time there will be a public hearing. However, you're not being asked to vote on the agenda, on the ordinance today. And with that, David is clearly asking me to do something I forgot about. Oh.
No, I forgot about it.
Okay. So you want to tell me what this means?
Sure.
I
didn't include Ms. Grayson in my proofing editorial board, and I should have. She noted on slide 15 that CPC also removed auto service from the exceptions, and auto service would be a protected use under the CPC recommendation. So as long as that was brought to our attention, we want to make sure everybody had that. Thank you.
So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, or I'll have Tammy and David help me. We also have Frank Kemp and Nicole from OEQ and James McGuire, our environmental attorney, to assist me.
Thank you, Teresa. I want to have a good conversation about this, and I want to do this publicly. That being said, I know I have a couple of legal questions, and I know other people do. So I am going to get the legal stuff done right now.
Okay.
And then we will come back in and ask those questions of you and have that discussion. Just for logistics for everybody, we'll break into executive session right now. Right, Mr. Ernst, are you okay with that? Okay. And then we'll hopefully we've got to, another event that, so we've got to be done at 11:30. So let's get as far as we can with the executive session. We'll come back at 1, finish executive session, or come back into open session, depending how far, how much progress we make. And then we'll just proceed with the afternoon, okay? So that's what the idea is. So it is now 11:13 a.m. on Wednesday, November 20th, 2013. The City Council will now go into executive session pursuant to Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meeting Act to consult with and receive legal advice from our attorneys concerning gas drilling regulations. Thank you. Thank you. It is now 2:33 p.m. on Wednesday, November 20th, 2013. The City Council will now go back into open session. We met under an executive session pursuant to Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to consult with and receive legal advice from our attorneys concerning gas drilling regulations. Hopefully. Okay. Thank you. Ms. Grayson, you're up first. I want to just okay, Mr. Atkins, no. Mr. Kingston, no. Mr. Kadane, no. Mr. Ms. Hill, anything? Okay. Yes. Yes.
Thank you for your presentation, ma'am. Mine are general questions. What is natural gas used for?
Heating your homes. Primarily, is compressed gas for vehicles, David, or is that natural gas?
Yes. And what right now, DARPA has converted basically their entire
fleet. Can you speak into the mic, please?
Sorry. Certainly, a lot of the city vehicles now run on CNG, compressed natural gas, as well as DART has converted their fleet to run on compressed natural gas.
And does natural gas have usages in residential establishments?
It certainly does in my residence.
And
runs my furnace and boils my water, I think. So,
where does the natural gas that powers Dallas come from?
That's a good question. It started underground somewhere, I'm pretty sure about that. But no, I mean, there's a network of pipelines throughout the country that carry gas. In fact, pipelines are one way gas is stored, and it's just available as the demand happens. So it comes from Fort Worth, it comes from the Barnett, some of it may come from elsewhere.
The risk of drilling, is that risk, whatever it may be, and I'm not articulating whether there is or not, I'm just saying if there is risk, is that risk carried by the place where the drilling is done?
Certainly it can be. I mean,
And does the place where the drilling is done also have the benefit of the drilling?
For those that are consuming that product, yes, ma'am.
If Dallas is consuming the product, is Dallas benefiting from natural gas drilling?
I think that's been a decision that's been made for our fleet, at least, and DART's fleet, that is a benefit to the city. And yes, ma'am.
And if there is no drilling in Dallas, then is it reasonable that Dallas is not carrying a risk of something that it is benefiting from? Is that a reasonable statement?
Well, I guess it needs to be worth drilling in Dallas first. But, yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a broader question, really. But
I began by saying I had general questions.
Yes, ma'am. But, yes, I mean, clearly, if it was to be produced here, then
we would be carrying some of the risk and some of the benefit. As it is, if it's imported in, then we're basically getting the benefit. Yes, ma'am.
If wherever the natural gas came from, if whoever does that said, if you don't carry the risk, you don't get the benefit. And if Dallas did not have the benefit of natural gas, what is the alternative energy source?
It's the same energy sources, I guess, we've been using, petroleum products, in terms of vehicles, and, you know, if some, you know, in some places it's used to generate electricity, so whatever, wherever that's happened, it would have to be generated through some other fossil fuel or some other fuel source. Doesn't have to be a fossil fuel. I guess there's a variety of answers. Right now, most of the energy in these parts, I understand, is produced probably through the use of coal.
And so if we take away the natural gas, the most readily available alternative is coal?
Well, I'm going to have to defer to other experts on that, but typically I think if on a fossil fuel-based economy, I would say yes. For power generation, that's probably true.
What about solar and wind?
They're great alternatives, and they're utilized. I'm just not sure that they could... And again, we're kind of going pretty broad here. And,
that was the premise.
That there's enough resources there to currently fulfill the demands of the area.
But if I take away the gas, the natural gas, I would have to, in order to generate the same degree of utilization that we have now in both homes and cities and commercial establishments, I would need to put some alternative in its place.
Unless we dramatically reduced our consumption, yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Callahan? I think you're up. You're up. Yeah. From this morning.
Mainly have comments, but I don't know if we're taking comments now or just strictly questions.
Yeah, please, anything. You've got the mic.
Mainly have comments, but, you know, obviously in a perfect world, you know, we, you know, where we would have, you know, ample alternative energy sources that would enable, you know, we as Americans, Texans, and also Dallasites to avoid, you know, contact with hydrocarbons and in the constant pursuit thereof. However, we've not yet discovered, at least we've not elevated our technology to reduce or eliminate the need for hydrocarbons. And neighboring cities, they have actively pursued extracting natural gas at a high rate, and it's being done so in a very profitable way. Not only are the neighboring cities benefiting, but DFW Airport, of which we own 50% or half ownership, you know, they've generated about $300 million in royalties, you know, to this date for the last 30 years. This has enabled the airport, of course, to lower landing fees, you know, for our airport tenants, which I think has been a very beneficial thing. I think our city is really missing out on a golden opportunity to seek and discover and exploit these very important, you know, natural and useful natural resources. You know, folks, we need the cash. You know, we need the money that we could generate from these natural resources. And in my opinion, you know, property owners have a constitutional right to extract these resources for profit and gain. You know, the city, as we all know, we're starving for new revenue. And this new revenue could be used for new streets and alleys and signal lights, parks, and a new lake in my district, in District 5 in Crawford Park. Now, these funds can also be used for salary increases, higher health insurance premiums, retirement pensions, and capital improvement expenditures. Therefore, I'm going to be voting no on the CPC-recommended version of the policy change on gas drilling. I believe these changes that are being proposed are onerous and restricting and arcane, and really patently unfair and unnecessary. There's too much evidence, in my opinion, that shows extraction of gas can be done in a way that protects both the environment while enabling property owners to benefit from the revenue that will be generated. If we're going to decide to allow drilling, then why add to the cost of drilling, and why risk lawsuits? Why cause a delay for extraction or creating impediments that block or lessen economic incentive? This exercise that we're having on these proposed revisions, in my opinion, is really more about stonewalling and creating barricades, roadblocks, impediments towards prohibiting the gas industry from entering our city and extracting gas, which they have a legal right to do. The opponents to fracturing for gas want this to send this industry packing, as has been noted in the past, quote unquote, and the horse they rode in on. You know, the standards proposed here are far more stringent than any other neighboring city and also even the federal regulations. And I don't see why Dallas has to take a back seat to this economic opportunity when we're in great need for funds. So much need within the city. So much could be done. And the fact is, you know, people have a right to get these minerals. And what we're doing is a very procedural way to block their ability to get it. And, you know, but we recognize that to avoid a lawsuit, you know, we've got to give them some kind of an opportunity, but yet in a very restrictive, narrow way. And I, for one, believe that the restrictions that the federal government has placed, and also just using Fort Worth as a model, I think that we should be able to follow that same model. It just seems to be very interesting that the airport that we own half of, they've been able to benefit by that, and then we, the city, we're just kind of like having our cake and eat it too. We're going to let the airport do it, but we're not going to do it. And my district needs the funds. You know, there's been a limitation of things that are a limitation in the amount of funds that we could utilize for District 5, and I think this gives us a fair opportunity to do it. So we all recognize, in closing, that we're going to do it. We're going to have gas drilling perhaps in some way. I just think it's very restricting, you know, the rules that we're proposing here. And I prefer the task force, you know, their proposal much more so than the CPC. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. Can we go to page 28 or slide 28? Thank you. I have been right from the beginning very interested in how we deal with the water use that fracking, they use a lot of water. I would like to ask staff to investigate ways to restrict water use by industries like fracking during times when residential uses have restrictions on them. So during times of drought or during times of stage one or stage two or whatever stage drought restriction we're in, I'd like to look at ways to investigate how we can apply that to uses like fracking.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Mr. Cadane.
Your mic. Oh, yeah, we're working now. Okay. Teresa, as far as our drilling in the city of Dallas, where can we drill in the city of Dallas?
Well, we do currently have an ordinance on the books, and it requires an SUP, and the ordinance now requires a 300-foot minimum separation. So if you filed a permit today, those are the rules that you would play by. Now, when I say 300-foot minimum, that's just a minimum. You could always impose a more restrictive separation if you found that the site conditions justified that.
Okay, and I think where I'm trying to get at is location, drilling locations. Is it true? Is that a fair statement to say? Only drilling will happen west of the Trinity. and why?
Well, the if you're talking about the limits of the Barnett Shale, I think people think
I like the Barnett Shale. I mean, where can you drill in this city? Do you know?
Well, right now you can make an application to drill in any district by SUP.
Okay. Okay. Can I drill in District 9?
District 9.
Yeah. Wait a minute. What? Yes, sir. Right in the middle.
You could request an SUP.
Right.
I'm not sure you'd be very lucky there. But you could apply for a specific use permit to do that.
That's where I'm going. How many oil and gas fields are there east of the Trinity River? And I mean, this has been proven.
Right. There's
seismic and everything to prove.
There's no drilling imbalance right now.
There are no fields west of the Trinity.
Right.
The only drilling in the city of Dallas would happen west of the Trinity. That's where the Barnett Shale is. Barnett Shale does not go east of the Trinity. There are no other fields east of the Trinity. So you wouldn't be drilling there.
Okay.
So we've got a segregated location to drill. That's where I'm getting at. And we're looking at putting a 1,500-foot minimum from the drilling line. And I venture to say you can't find a lease out there to where you go 1,500 feet, you can't drill. You can't get a lease large enough to drill a well. So I think we're kidding ourselves if we do that and put an ordinance in like that. I think we need to make sure if they want to drill, and I don't think there's going to be any drilling today in these areas, that we need to have an ordinance that gives them an opportunity to drill. And I think the 500-foot setback is safe and is not going to hurt anybody in that situation. They talk about the gas and everything like that. The pollution is not, it's not there. If you see the pollution scale, gas is maybe 4% of the entire pollution system, and it's just it really doesn't count. So that's my remarks, Mayor. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Mr. Allen.
Slide five. I was looking at those number of wells in Fort Worth just as an example, 1,856 wells. Do you know how much revenue Fort Worth generated?
We did have a Fort Worth staffer come over and speak with us. David, do you have that number off the top of your head?
I think it over the past several from 06 to 12, I want to say. For some reason, I'm thinking it's $263 million. Let me see if I've got about $264 million, but that includes lease royalties, property taxes on mineral.
That's revenues. $264 million divided by 14. Be a nice round number. I assume to use that on quality of life issues for Fort Worth, $264 million. Do you know what their separation distance is?
It's 600 feet, sir.
600 feet. Do you know of those 1,856 wells, do you know of any tragic accidents?
No, sir. I have no personal knowledge of that.
Okay. Do you know what's the rationale for this extensive setback being the 1,500? Do you know the rationale?
That setback was recommended by the Planning Commission, and David, maybe you can speak to there just for sure.
I think, you know, there's a number of studies out there, and there's a number of concerns, and there's a lot of contradictory information, contradictory studies, but I think ultimately the Planning Commission felt like, I don't even know if I can speak for the Planning Commission, but made a determination that 1,500-foot was supportive. As I mentioned previously, certainly being able to vary it down to some lesser distance to look at each individual case and on an individual basis made a lot of sense. One of our concerns really was not preempting the flexibility of if I wanted to be 2,000 feet from the nearest residence, and if that meant being 500 feet from the nearest service station, then that might be a reasonable trade-off to make. I think it's not only the distance, but the dramatic expansion of the number of uses that are protected. But, you know, some of the debate at the Plan Commission was, well, if I'm protecting residents, why wouldn't I protect an office? But, you know, in our typical land use analysis, we're looking at impacts, dust, light, noise, and it's unusual to hear or to be faced with a debate over air pollution and whether that is site-specific or just a general impact on the environment from a lot of trucks operating and measuring that use. But I think the Plan Commission apparently just felt like that was the distance they selected.
There's also a task force recommendation, and of those, between those two, the task force and the CPC, which one would staff favor?
I think, again, to us, the task force recommendation makes sense to give the council the flexibility to offer greater protection to a school if it meant narrowing that distance down against other uses that are currently considered protected uses.
Well, example along those uses, if we had a fertilization plant today, what would be the required setback on that? Say, like the one in West, what's the required setback?
There'd be no required setback.
If we had a petroleum storage tanks today, what's the required setback?
There's not a setback written within the ordinance.
Can you think of any other land use that has this type of restrictive setbacks when it comes to the 1,500 feet?
When we looked at that, we could only identify one land use, and that was a pathological incinerator.
Okay. Can you think of any reason why the city council should tie its hands in the hands of the future council members and not allow the special use process to go in place, say a maximum 1,500, minimum 500? Can you think of any reason why?
Well, I think ultimately that gets to be all's decision. But, again, from just looking at it from the land use perspective, if I can offer greater protection to some uses and protect a residential use
case by case.
On a case-by-case basis, analyzing the facts specific, then that would be an option.
I agree with Councilman Callahan and also Councilman Kadane, particularly when it comes to the safety issue. I think it's a highly regulated industry. There's no question that it's a highly regulated industry. No question about that. From the one needs to look at the overall accident rates and just really do the study of that. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. You know, fear is a great thing to put out there. Always want to have that boogeyman in the closet and have the fear factor always out there. And all I ask is, and I've asked it before when we talk about the fear factor of this, is bring the boogeyman out of the closet. Show us the boogeyman. Show us the facts. Not accusations or what might be or what could be, but pull the boogeyman out. I'd like to see him come out of the closet. Yeah, that's where he's been. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two questions on the page 18 of the presentation. I don't have to have this exact answer today, but I would like to know what other areas in our zoning that require this three-fourths, this kind of waiver, and also this this distance.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
We get that for you.
Okay. And then on page 29, I just had a question on the floodplain that we can remove from the floodplain. Could you tell me how land could be removed from the floodplain?
I think you had a fill permit in your district last week, didn't you?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the same purpose.
It
has to be filled first before it can be removed.
Right.
Okay. Just like it would be in residential around the creeks.
Right.
Okay.
So the council, we get applications for fill permits all the time, which is removing that floodplain elevation.
And so it's the same.
What you do
okay.
is you build up, yes, same thing.
Same thing. That's what I was checking on. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor.
Just for the record, I'd want to say, even if they did discover natural gas under White Rock Lake, I would not support drilling there. I'm a vote no. That is one of the most precious resources we have in the city of Dallas, like so many other places. And I see White Rock Lake as a goal for so many other neighborhoods. And I want to give them the same benefits, and I want to see those other great neighborhoods here south of the Trinity and over on the western half of our city get there too. So I certainly support the CPC recommendations over the task force recommendations. Because we talk about a lot of times these industrial uses. Industrial uses have to be in industrial zoning. I think, Teresa, you'd agree. One difference with this gas drilling is it requires an SUP.
Right.
And so if I did have some type of incinerator or something, you couldn't go in the middle of a residential neighborhood because the underlying zoning isn't there.
Some of those uses are restricted to particular districts and require an SUP, and some are just district specific.
So many industrial uses we restrict through underlying zoning.
Right.
Other industrial processes, and we should not mince words here, this gas drilling is an industrial process involving heavy trucks indefinitely rolling through the neighborhood as long as production continues. It's not just the production that goes 24 hours a day with the noise and everything else for a couple weeks to get the will, to get the, I didn't know if I heard a comment over here or not. Thank you. And it's not just the production that goes on for the 2 weeks, but it's indefinitely all the truck traffic and everything else that continues for some period of time. And this is a heavy industrial use. And so this type of heavy industrial use, we want to keep out of our neighborhoods, just as we do any other industrial use where we use base zoning, but here use a 1,500-foot setback. Because this really comes down to quality of life, because we all share the same air, we all share the same water, and we want to build up the rest of our city to be just what like White Rock Lake and these other great places that will attract people, because that's really what's going to give us economic development and make us a city for the 21st century. And so on these reductions, too, on any variance, if it is proposed, I'm not going to support any variance that requires only 8 votes. I'm going to put that out there, too. I think that would have the exception swallowing the rule. And if there is a variance, just as the task force and the CPC agreed, the variance has a higher standard, just like we do so many times in the city of Dallas with other variances. If not, we're going to have the exception swallow the rule on that. So, and if they are listening, I know our chair of our gas drilling task force, I don't know if she's still here or not, but was here this morning, Lois Finkelman, listening. So, was here actually in here in the chamber, but I just want to, in the briefing room, want to thank her and all the other task force members again for their hard work, and certainly the CPC for all their hard work. I think the CPC used the task force recommendations as a great building block and went on for there. I think they share that great vision of having wonderful cities and communities just like White Rock Lake throughout our city. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to mention for the people who are listening, all those folks who wrote to me, sent emails, and let me know that they were concerned about the water use that fracking takes. The reason we could not put that into this ordinance, I want them to know why it isn't going to be in this ordinance, is because this is a land use and zoning ordinance, and that is not land use and zoning. So I wanted them to know why we're not going to be able to consider that together with this ordinance.
Good.
But that we will
Thank
be
you.
Looking at it later,
yes.
Because staff is going to bring us back information. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On the recommendation, Teresa, is it two recommendations here? Is recommendation for zoning protection and recommendation for distance? Are those two separate ones?
Well, the Plan Commission has made a recommendation, and the recommendation is a gas drilling ordinance that has just
so many different types of things, permitted uses, all kinds of things. And those, but those, the uses and the distance separation, those were the kind of the key differences.
Is there any other recommendation? Is this it? Is there any other recommendation that's not here? And this is everything that's been recommended by the CPC.
That's it, ma'am. Yes,
ma'am. The other question, is this ordinance a part of just in case gas drilling come back on before in the next couple of years? Mm-hmm. There's something in place?
Well, we have something in place now. And this is just an amendment to the ordinance that already exists.
Okay, so the task, what we have now in existence, is this what the task force came up with, or did we have something way before the task force started?
We actually drafted one in 2007. And then in 2011, the task force looked at that 2007 ordinance to see maybe it needed to be beefed up.
Now, the one that when we came on the council in 2007, is that the one that this council recommended, or is it something that staff presented to the council in 07?
It is. I'm looking around to see who might have been here. Mr. Cadane was probably here at that time, and Ms. Grayson, were
we
you
were
on hiatus
here
at that time?
We
were
out here.
In 2007?
Uh-huh. So this
2007?
So okay. this council, okay. I guess what I'm asking, 2007, based on the gas drilling that was already in place, was it already there, or was 2007 the ordinance for the first time?
Well, we did process a couple of, we didn't have an ordinance in 2007. This gas drilling really took off in the western part of the Metroplex, and they started kind of creeping east. 2007, we started to get applications. The only ordinance umbrella we had to process at that time was under a sand and gravel mining
mm-hmm.
permit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we started with two, but really understood right then we needed to get moving and get a gas drilling ordinance in place.
So between 2007 to 2002, we really didn't have anything in place.
Not that was specifically written for that.
For gas drilling. Now, on the distance and on the protection, when does this come to the full council for approval?
Well, if it's the pleasure of the council, we will schedule the ordinance for action on the December 11th agenda.
Okay. And what we're looking at, so I can have clear understanding, is we will be looking at the CPC recommendation.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. It takes, does it take eight votes, or does it take what?
It takes eight votes.
Okay. For the CPC recommendation.
Yes, ma'am.
If the eight votes don't get it, then what's next?
Then someone could offer an amendment to the CPC recommendation.
And if that eight vote doesn't happen, then what's next?
Then we could have another amendment. So just like your zoning afternoon agenda, sometimes you take the CPC recommendation, sometimes you take CPC recommendation with the following changes. Sometimes those motion fails, and sometimes that you continue, the body deliberates and continues
guess,
to amend those motions.
I guess what I'm saying, if we don't come up with a compromise, because I don't think we're going, this is going to be a compromise here.
Then the ordinance currently in effect stays in effect.
Okay, that's what I want, and that stays.
Which is a 300-foot separation. With the SUP.
Huh?
An SUP and a 300-foot minimum requirement. That's what is currently in place.
Oh, so I didn't see the existing.
Now, that doesn't mean that if a application comes forward, you can't increase that 300 feet. Just like now, you can increase it 300 feet, 600 feet, 1,000 feet, 1,500 feet. But the minimum requirement today is 300 feet.
Okay, so if the council members, and we can't get to the eight, however the vote may go, until something happens, it will stay the way it is as of today.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Teresa, thank you, and also thank the task force, and thank you, Mr. Carraway, for creating the task force and waiting for the new council member to come in to dig into it. And when they dug into it, we're still talking about it. I'm just going to turn the page back a little bit. back in 2007, on page 17, the existing recommendation was 300 feet minimum, and SUP can require greater distance. Teresa, when this task force was formed, and Mayor Carraway formed the task force to come and work this out, did staff work hand-in-hand with the task force to come up with this 1,000 feet? The task force was a separate entity, and the staff was there to back up to get information?
We did both, sir. We heard, because we're not subject matter experts, so this task force heard from the EPA, from the Railroad Commission, from the TCEQ, from other cities, from the industry. So there was very expert testimony given, a lot of reports. So that we don't have that expertise on, so
right.
This was very, very helpful. Now, our participation was, what we did was we did a matrix of the other cities in the Metroplex to see what their land use regulations, how they compared. And so we presented that information to the task force. So as they worked through all these issues, they could see how other cities were treating them.
Okay.
And
so when the task force, with a recommendation, look at other cities, was there a minimum requirement? It's at 1,000 feet. Was the minimum at 500 to 1,000? I'm trying to find out how did we work our way up to the 1,000 feet? What was the gap? I mean, what was the gap? Did the task force say, you know, it could be 500, it could be 1,000? I mean, how did we get to the 1,000? From 300 to 1,000, and from CBC, from 300 to 1,500 feet?
I think it was based on a number of things, what other cities were currently doing, because as we've seen, other cities have a lot more experience in this than we do. We
right.
still don't have a single well drilled in Dallas.
So what do Fort Worth have? What is our distance Fort Worth?
600 feet.
600 feet, and they don't drill having a well.
1,800
well, 600 feet, and our main concern is the safety of the citizens of Dallas.
Absolutely.
Have there been any issues at Fort Worth with
not,
safety?
Not to my knowledge,
safety,
sir.
Okay. And look at DFW. Do we have a distance, separated distance at DFW on our well? Do you know?
From only their industrial uses, I don't know. I
just
will check that.
Factors.
Just safety factors.
What?
Just FAA safety type factors.
Okay. And if you compare this in separation to any other type of business like petroleum, you know, storage tank or whatever, do we have a separated distance between that?
We typically do separate a minimum. As these SUPs come forward to the council, it's not unusual that we set a required, but in terms of mandating
right.
a minimum, that's a little unusual.
Okay.
But we'll do that analysis for you for the industrial
use. I'm looking at, you know, we have not drilled any wells in Dallas yet, right?
Yes, sir.
Since we have not drilled anything yet, and we are trying to put all these guidelines and stipulations on something we have not done.
Right.
Should this be on like case by case?
Well, that's.
Yeah. I hate to say it. Here's 1,000 feet right here, and out of nowhere, I can do 500 feet. You know, separation. Then I got to go fight for future council. You know, I'm just trying to figure out. Did we consider that?
Right. So SUPs allow you to set that if you don't have a minimum or have a lower minimum, which is.
Why? Okay, the minimum. I'll say right now we had three. Position 300, so we went to 1,000, and also see the CPC went to 1,500. I mean, that's a big jump. You look at Fort Worth, they say they got 600, you know.
Right.
So I'm just saying, you know, what the market bar. You always look at the market and see what other cities are doing or what other best practices are doing. And also that looking at flexibility,
right.
That when you need flexibility, that if you're going to invite, you know, people coming to the city to drill, and we do need resource or revenue to drill, you are kind of deterring those investors away to come in here. And people who got millions say, oh, it's kind of a bad deal because I don't have a right to get my revenue back out. So I'm looking at that. I think, you know, the 1,000 is a little too high. I don't look at between 500 and kind of work to have a case-by-case situation. So I wish you go back and look at, you know, how you have flexibility in that task force and CPC and versus existing drilling.
Yes, sir. We'll do that analysis for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Allen.
Just a quick, kind of a quick little follow-up. I agree with Ms. Grayson when it comes to the water issues. These are big issues that continue to need to be looked at. There's no question that, you know, 4 million gallons of water is a lot of water. And so, and we've had some discussion, and I think as the time years go by, that, you know, we treat our wastewater, and we treat it, clean it up, and it's about 52 billion gallons, billions, not millions, but billions, goes back into the Trinity River. So that's a lot of water, and maybe we can concentrate just as heavy on how to recapture that water back into the lakes itself, because that makes a lot more difference, the 52 billion, than the 4 million. So, but both processes, yeah, 4 million for fracking, 52 billion treated wastewater goes back into the Trinity. So that's right. So we can work on that. Just want to, on the economic development with White Rock Lake, that scenario, we have the same dreams that we would like to see those, you know, all over the parts of this city. And maybe that's why we continue to fight as hard as we do for making it a reasonable requirement for folks to drill. We mentioned Fort Worth. The only reason we throw Fort Worth out there, Mayor, what'd you say it was, 260 million?
Yeah, 263, yeah.
If you do the math on that, it would take us to have, under this scenario, it would have to be $30 billion of property would have to be generated out of, say, the council district to come back to that number, $30 billion. I don't see that happening with an attitude of we don't want it. The reason I say that attitude is goes back to what Councilman Atkins, we saw yesterday, and Councilman Kingman was there too. One of our, what was it, Mr. Pickens?
Yep.
Mr. Pickens, and he's done a lot for this city based on his energy, oil and gas business and what he's done. But he made a major contribution to help people at the end times of their life. Clyde Warren Park, people enjoy that. Major contribution came from a gentleman that has 5,000 employees in his pipeline, gas pipelines. It's his company. And these are the kind of folks that are going to build your White Rock Lake or help you do it, or could help you do it. I don't know. Maybe that's why you don't have a White Rock Lake. Maybe that's why other ones do, because they reach out, put their hands around them, say hello to them. So anyway, I'm going to go along with you, Rick, on your recommendations as we go forward. I think it's every situation has to be looked at individually and recognize that it is a revenue source that needs to be, as it is now, governed, and at the same time continue to reach out for these revenue sources to help the other area of the cities that need that help. And so thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And I've been listening, and I'm going to continue to listen. I'm not going to speak too much on the issue. I've already made one move, and that was to appoint Lois Finkelman, as you all have recognized, as chair, and to appoint a task force. And I want to thank Ms. Finkelman and that task force for taking on this very tough issue. It's been one that's been going back and forth, and we're still going at it. I'd like to suggest to all parties that's listening, it appears, as relate to the fact that we're all citizens of this city, that we're going to be moving somewhat towards some form of compromise at some point. It's not going to be a winner. It's not going to be a loser. Nobody will win. Somebody will lose. But it's not going to be what everybody wants. So as we begin to fashion this thing, I'm listening for what is going to be the deciding factor and what's going to be in the best benefit of the citizens at the end of the day. In polling and kind of seeing where the lay of the land is, it's going to be a real tough one. And we need to figure out where we're going to be. I've heard about in a lake, the land underneath the lake, is that what is the lake considered? I know I'm asking something.
Great.
But a lake just considered a lake. If the lake were to dry up, would that lake then become just land?
Probably floodplain.
And I only say that out of fun because, Sheffy, I was about to say we can't drill in White Rock Lake anyway because it's park land. Right, we can't do that. Okay, so it won't be any drilling in any of the Bachman Lakes and White Rock Lakes and none of that. So that's one thing. Then I have something else that's just a little different from this. How long is it going to take? I've been dealing with this since about 11 o'clock this morning. I listen to y'all. How long is it going to take us, Warren, to write this ordinance? We're going to have it. It's saying we're going to do something. You're going to have it by December 11th.
No.
Big pardon?
Yes, sir. There is an ordinance that's prepared.
It's one that's prepared that's going to be presented.
It will be presented to the council, if it's your desire, on December 11th. And then any amendments to that ordinance could be considered at that time.
Okay, at that time. I only asked that for another reason. I'm gonna leave it alone. Okay, I'm gonna keep listening. Well, I'm gonna tell you why I asked that because you know, I want you all to. There's another ordinance that we're saying we can't write that fast. and that's my plastic bag. I'm gonna be real clear about that. And y'all tell me it's gonna take a long time, but yet we're gonna write this one and have this one before us on the 11th. So. I just want to throw that out there. Mayor, I'm going to stop for now.
Thank you, Mr. Gregg.
Thank you. Just want to clarify a little bit of the economics here. For people who didn't realize, we've had a gas drilling ordinance since 2007.
Right.
And have people been able to file applications to drill over here since 2007?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we haven't seen a rush for applications yet. That probably has to do that for some geology. We're east of what's called the Ouachita Fault, which is a part of the Barnett Shale where production greatly drops off. And we know that firsthand from our work at DFW Airport, where we own 7/11 of DFW Airport. And so being east of the Ouachita Fault, you really see production drop off. And people throw out these wild numbers of almost $300 million in revenue we would get. If there was all that money and they'd be making all that money, we probably would have seen a few more applications filed since 2007. That's how long we've had an ordinance in place. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Kellen, I'll close.
I just had a quick clarification. You know, we're really not talking about fracking in our neighborhoods. That's been bounced around the horseshoe here. We're really talking about mainly in industrial manufacturing zoned areas. And those are only sites west of the Trinity River, as Councilman Cadane very adroitly put. Now, there's only a few select areas of our city in which, you know, fracking can occur anyway, and this opportunity is really going to exist only even with fracking over the next 35 or 50 years, and then we're done. We've exhausted the resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gregg.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, what Mr. Gregg said. That's the truth. Nothing's been drilled. So what are you afraid of putting in a good ordinance in order to less give them an opportunity to drill? Because I don't think they're going to drill either, Scott. So why can't we make the ordinance to where if you want to, you can drill? And that way we're free and clear and we're beyond suit. So I think that's what needs to happen. And I think we need to do the 500 foot.
Well, I'm going to respond to that since my name was mentioned. It's simply because I'm here to protect the public safety foremost. We all share the same air and water, and it's shown that if you go in and drill places, I don't think they're going to. There may not be many places to drill, but if they do drill, what they'll end up doing is wrecking neighborhoods on the west side of Dallas near the Trinity River. And those are neighborhoods that I believe in that are far away from, I know they're far away from District 9 and other districts, but they're over there. I want to see those neighborhoods develop. And those neighborhoods deserve the same benefit of same safety as the rest of our neighborhoods. And so I foremost believe in public safety. And our job is to protect quality of life first and foremost. And I do not gamble with public safety, do not play games, don't play poker with public safety or anything else or ever jeopardize it. That is our foremost responsibility here, and we all took an oath of office for it. Thank you.
I have to rebut that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You say that we're in jeopardy. You have no proof at all that any of this is jeopardizing the public facility in any way, shape, or form. You have no proof. You didn't prove that. Prove it up that these are unsafe events. They're not. And you don't have proof of that. So you're not telling the whole truth to the public.
Let's go over there and drill in your neighborhood. Put a drill site there. Get it going 24 hours a day for 2 weeks. Then indefinitely through your residential streets, down your neighborhood, run heavy 18-wheelers. All the time.
Okay.
Let's see how that affects your quality of life.
And we've gone back and forth.
You said they were unsafe, Scott. You didn't say they had trucks running up and down. You were trying to say the process is totally unsafe and is going to harm our community. That's a lie.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. We've had enough of it. Ms. Hill, you want to. Ms. Hill's got the last word, and then I'm going to say something.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Allen had
it's all right. Thank you.
Ms. Hill?
Now, go ahead. You're elegant.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do want to make it very clear to all who may be listening, to all of my colleagues, that all of us have as a primary concern the public health and safety of our citizens. I do not believe that anyone who sits around this horseshoe has any greater concern than any other council member. All of us have the same concern. We may differ in our opinions, but that does not make anyone's opinion more or less valid than any other council member. The area most likely, if there's any drilling, is the area that I represent in the Mountain Creek area. There are persons in the Mountain Creek area, well-spoken, well-intentioned, who are absolutely against gas drilling. There are also persons in that area, equally well-spoken and equally well-intentioned, who absolutely favor gas drilling. We are charged as public officials with having a respectful, intelligent, and considered conversation. It is inappropriate and unacceptable for any one of us, myself included, to place any claim or implication that any one of us has any greater or lesser concern for the public health and safety of the citizens of Dallas, Texas, than any one of the others of us. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Amen.
All right, we're going to take this up on December 11th.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you for your work on this. Thank you, Mr. Ernst, for the long session we had. Thank you for the city. I do want to agree with what has been said, that safety is our primary focus, and I think we as a council believe that. If anybody's hearing this, I hope that they see that we are doing nothing arbitrarily or in a capricious manner. We're doing it in a thoughtful manner. Each person might have their point of view, but as a body, as a council, we're going to be doing this for the safety of the citizens and the respect of private property. And you'll see us move forward in that regard. So just everybody know that publicly. I probably have a little bit... unique point of view on this that I think we almost should start with the fact that Mr. Cadane and Mr. Griggs seem to agree on, that there hasn't been any drilling, and I don't think there's going to be any drilling. And every geologist I have been talking to says there's a good reason why all those red dots are where they are and why they're not to the right. And so the question is now, what is our fiduciary responsibility as a council, and how do we deal with the wonderful attorneys that are probably circling overhead? And we've got to kind of think carefully about that. And so the nuances of this process are going to be extremely important, focusing on the details of this, because we want to make sure that we're very safe and that we respect people's rights to their private property. I like Mr. Carraway's coaching, that this shouldn't be about winning and losing. This should be about us coming together to do the right things. So, and I'm sure we will do that in the coming weeks. So with that, I think we should move on to the next subject.
Can I make one public statement?
I don't think so.
I want to apologize.
Okay, please.
I wanted to apologize to Mr. Griggs for calling. You're not a liar, Mr. Griggs. Some of your statements may not be totally true. But I apologize. And I didn't mean to call you out
of
line.
Thank you for that apology.
Okay. Yeah, I better shut up. I don't want to get any more.
You're good, Mr. Dean. Yeah. Now, next up is Mr.
In the spirit of moving on with information to the council that will help in next year's budget preparation, as we talked with you before, we're looking at our strategic planning elements, the various goals, objectives that we have and would include in our budget formulation. What you're going to be receiving this afternoon from Jill is a update as we're making progress on that effort. Jill.
Great. If you don't mind, I'm going to start on slide 6. In the interest of time, we're going to go for it here. Back on October 2nd, we briefed you all on strategic planning and gave you kind of an overview of the terminology. And this slide is actually a repeat from the slide in that briefing, talking about what it is that we're going to be doing. And so the purpose of this briefing is to kind of tease you, if you will, as to what's coming your way in the next 2 months. And so with that, I'd like to move on to the next page. We have been working on the staff level. At this point, we've formulated two sets of teams. One is a director-level team, and they're organized by KFA. And they are participating in a strategic planning exercise that we're doing over a course of 4 different meetings. We have also launched our budgeting for outcomes teams that you all are familiar with. That they always start up this time of year and then go on into the budget time frame. The next slide starts talking about what the two teams are doing. The directors are looking at the mission, vision, and values of the city. They are looking at what our strengths, our weaknesses, our opportunities, and our threats are to this organization. They're looking at the strategy maps that you all have looked at over the years, making sure that we've got the right strategies for the different issues. And then they will be reviewing and refining our goals, objectives, strategies, and tactics, and bringing those recommendations forward to you all. On the next slide, talking about the KFA teams, they are looking at best practices of other cities. They're looking at which cities we should compare ourselves to, what kind of benchmarking information we should be looking at, what our indicators of progress, our metrics should be.
Now, the outcomes from these two teams are that we are looking at what are our indicators of progress, our community indicators, if you will. We'll be looking and identifying best practices. We'll have cost analysis if we wanted to adopt those kind of practices. We'll be having recommendations for a strategic plan for FY15. And we'll be looking at opportunities for metrics. On the next slide, talking about what are you all going to be doing, all of this results will be coming to you all in your over the next couple of months, and it will be your opportunity to get this information and then refine it over time. The next steps, if you will, December 4th, we will have a briefing where we will give you the wrap-up of this last year's plan and show you the progress against that plan. In December and January at your committee meetings, we will be bringing you the research that we found on best practices and performance indicators. The council retreat is June 16th and 17th. That is a Thursday and a Friday. So, again, it's a half day on Thursday and all day Friday, January. And then we'll be presenting all this information at that time, and then the budget really begins going in full force after that. And with that, that's the briefing. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Jo. Ms. Davis?
Yes. excuse me. AC, on these best practice, can we also look at things that are happening in our city, in neighborhoods? For example, the Bishop Arks area. What's going on in Mr. Allen's district? What's going on around the Trinity? I went over to a deal that Gillum had over at Alof. What was that, Jill?
It was the Connected Cities Design Challenge as part of the Trinity.
Can that be a part?
Yes, ma'am. And let me restate what I think I'm hearing you say, is that when we look to other cities for best practice, mm-hmm. sometimes those best practices are in our own backyard. And yes, we do want to lift those up and to see if we can learn from them and apply them in other areas as well.
Let me ask this. They did a Connected Cities. Do you know about that?
Yes.
Is there any way we can talk about that? Can that be a part of some
right.
of the
Right. We want to
yes.
bring those results to you all.
Okay.
Yes,
so that will be a part of the
yes,
strategy.
Ma'am.
And I guess the other thing is we talk about connecting things, looking at Grow South, or looking at the southern half of our city, are there urban designers out there who can connect those areas in the southern sector to the Connect Cities from the southern sector, and how does it kind of pull itself towards downtown, up to downtown? So you got the southern half of the city, which starts from Fair Park, South Dallas, Oak Cliff, bucks up to Cedar Hill, it goes around to Mountain Creek, it comes all the way around to Scott District, it hits his district, it hits some of both Medrano and Alonzo. How do we bring all of that together where we can kind of see that it feeds off each other? That's what I'm interested in.
Yes, ma'am. It's going to touch on all those kinds of things.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Ms. Grayson?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Jill, this was kind of a 50,000-foot level, you know, briefing.
Mm-hmm.
Bring me down to like a 10,000-foot and give me an example of a key focus area that you'll take to a committee. Give me an example of what that might be. Just an item that you're thinking will go to a committee for us to take a deeper look at.
Well, there are a number of technology kinds of initiatives that other cities are doing that we could bring to committees. We talked this morning about some of the things that are happening in the field of transportation and those kinds of best practices. There are, for example, a real simple one. We have seen a city in the Midwest that had a tire roundup in which the citizens were paid $2 per tire, and they were able to, you know, bring the tires in, and they collected thousands of tires. And for a relatively small sum of money, they were able to empty a lot of garages and, you know, places from tires and prevent them from going places, you know, like the Trinity. So, I mean, that's a very small example, but we're going to be looking at those kinds of best practices. You know, you all have been seeing the ones coming out of public safety, you know, over the last few months, and you have had a briefing on it. We want to do that same kind of thing in the other KFA areas.
Good. Thank you. And I had a question for AC. On the connected city, when Jill said that it's going to come to us, is it only going to be the finalist that comes to us, the one that the judges have chosen out of the three, and then maybe a public submission, or are we going to hear from all three firms that made presentations?
At this point, there's not the funding to bring the three firms back, and what we are doing is looking at the best ideas from all of the firms. And then not only are there the three firms, but there were the 100 or so submissions by other people. Some of them were by university professors or students or lay people. And we will all, the Connected City folks and the judging panel will be selecting the best out of those submissions as well. So we're mining all of that information to come up with the best ideas out of all of them, and we want to show them to you. It will probably be a briefing unto itself because there's that much material to show you all.
So you won't necessarily bring back one of the three firms. You're going to bring us back the best ideas from all three of them.
Yeah, I think what we'll do is that we'll end up showing you the three big ideas and then highlight for you kind of there's a jury panel and then there's also a staff group that's looking at all of these. And at this point, we don't know that we all have the same agreement as to what's best about each one, but each group likes different things about them that really make it unique and special and a memorable idea that we should put in our catalog of good things that we ought to think about in the future for doing along the Trinity. And so we want to highlight those for you.
Well, I went to all three of those presentations, and they were similar in some aspects and very different in others.
Right.
And I would hope that whatever you all come up with as part of a briefing, that you really highlight those differences between the three firms in the sorts of things they presented, the similarities and the differences, because they were significant differences. And so I kind of would like to see that without this process whereby you all have kind of decided what we're going to hear and what we're not going to hear. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Well, if I might add, there's already been what has been said out there already, so everybody's been hearing it. And well, there are a lot of folks have, and to the extent that we want to make sure that there was a lot of different ideas, and I think it's those differences that will pose some opportunities for discussion about how the council feels about those different ideas. But we think there is a wealth of good ideas that could be learned from that would apply not only to that particular exercise but other parts of the city, which was the earlier comment being made.
It just kind of worries me a little that there's this screening process that's going on now as to what will be presented to us and what won't. And so I would like to have as broad a representation as possible about what at least those three firms presented to us.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
And again, I guess another aspect of the question that you asked, I want to take a little bit different track on the examples. When you asked to get down to the 10,000, I want to maybe go even a little lower as 5,000. We're going to be looking at the objectives, some of the metrics that were included, goals, objectives that the council had worked on before, and some of the metrics that we included in the budget that we had last year. And we're re-looking at each one of those and trying to see to what extent they might be sharpened in terms of more focus and easier way of noting whether or not we're making progress on the achievement of those particular objectives and metrics. So we're taking a look at all of that. We're going to be bringing all that material back to you all in each of and all of the KFAs, but our goal is to see to what extent there might be refinement of those all those elements and to see how we can make them more result-oriented and more measurable.
I like that because some of what we have now is very broad. So I like the direction you're going in.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jordan. Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. That is item number C, and we will be going to open microphone. Ms. Rios.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We're going to begin your afternoon speakers. They're continuing from the open microphone category from this morning. Your speakers are Zach Trahan, Earl Richard Wittenberg, Linda Moore, Philip Brown. First, we start the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons becoming pertinent, profane, or who make slanderous remarks will be removed from the room if the sergeant-at-arms is so directed. You have 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. If any of you have handouts, we would ask that you go ahead and give them to staff now because that does impact your speaking time. Again, your first speaker, Zach Trahan. Mr. Trahan will be followed by Earl Richard Wittenberg.
Thanks, City Council. My name is Zach Trahan. I live at 6017 La Vista, 75206. We heard a lot about drilling today, and I wanted to add a few things that I saw happen today. If you look at the task force recommendations against the City Plan Commission recommendations, you're not looking at things that are side by side. You're looking at something that's going forward versus something that's going backwards. Because if you just look at the task force, you're ignoring the past 2 years of research, studies, evidence, and experience from neighboring cities. The City Plan Commission also took site visits. They also heard from the State Environmental Agency. They also heard from the task force itself, from Lois Finkelman herself, and then they used those recommendations as a basis to move forward. And that's what we're asking you to do as well. We talked a lot about setbacks and the distance requirements that other cities use, but another big, big difference here is the rules on compressor stations. As we saw with Trinity East, that company said that their proposed compressor station here in Dallas would have been the 10th largest source of hazardous air pollution in the city. And the task force recommendations didn't really have any meat and potatoes, actual regulations for compressor stations, and the City Plan Commission recommendations do. Compressor stations generally emit like 60-70%, according to recent studies, of all the total air pollution from these sites. And we heard a lot about potential water contamination, but we didn't really hear about air pollution from gas drilling. The State Environmental Agency says that if you add up all the air pollution from gas drilling, the volatile organic compounds, it's more than all the cars and trucks on our roads. That's a lot of air pollution. And the most recent studies from the past couple of years have been the things that have motivated the City Plan Commission and other cities to increase those setback distances. If you look at the Colorado Public School of Public Health, they said that if you live within a half a mile of a gas drilling site, you have an increased risk of cancer. There are studies from Pennsylvania from last year that say if you live within a half a mile of a gas drilling site, you have increased risk of premature birth, lower birth weights. And in fact, there's going to be a presentation on Friday in Cornell, at Cornell University, saying the same thing. They looked at thousands of gas wells in Colorado, and they found a correlation of anyone living within 3,000 feet that they have lower birth weights and higher prevalence of premature births. These are the boogeyman, if you will, is actual public health impacts. The City Plan Commission didn't get everything right. This is a compromise. There are a lot of parts of the City Plan Commission recommendations that we want to be a lot stronger than they are, whether it be setbacks, drilling on parks, drilling in floodplains. What they came up with at the end of the day was definitely a compromise, and that's why it had a 14-1 vote, because they all recognized that that's the best that they were going to be able to do. That's the best balance that they were going to be able to strike. And at the end of the day, everyone walked away not liking certain parts of it. That's what we're asking you to support now, is that kind of compromise. Thanks.
Your next speaker is Earl Richard Wittenberg. Is not present. Linda Moore. Ms. Moore will be followed by Philip Brown and William Crowder.
Linda Moore, 8652 Ashcroft, Dallas, Texas. I've had some interesting experiences at the Dallas Public Library. For the last 3 months, I have been getting limited access using Wi-Fi. And when I go to the librarian, they said, well, nobody else is having that problem. Must be your computer. And then they decided, okay, we're going to use one of the Mary Kay donated laptops. And we'll see. Wouldn't even load one web page. So they pulled out another laptop. Nope, that wouldn't work either. The broadband to the branch libraries is on Wi-Fi is virtually non-existent. I went to McDonald's, and I had absolutely no problem getting on. So the problem is with the Dallas library system. Now, in 2007, there was $30 million allocated for the Dallas Public Library system. Now there's about $20 million, and my numbers may be slightly off. But our library system is really the guts. The people that I see using the library are people that are unemployed and they're doing their resume, or a mother is bringing in her children to get them used to reading. And so these are all educational benefits, and they're things that the city of Dallas should support. I might also add that the city of Dallas, in terms of its funding, is at the very bottom of all the major cities in this country. and that is an issue that needs to be addressed. Part of this bit about internet access, it's a competition. If I start a company here, but the only qualified people that I can find are coming from Plano or they're coming from Frisco, then I've got a decision to make. Maybe I need to move to Frisco where you've got Verizon access. There are issues there in terms of the quality of service. We need educated citizens, and the way to do it is to provide adequate financial support for the Dallas library system.
Thank you. Mr. Allen?
Ms. Moore, thank you for coming down and making us aware of this. The city is working on this, from what I understand, Mr. Gonzalez, and maybe a couple of months away, something like that.
Yes, sir. We are aware of the situation. You're absolutely correct. It's not where it should be, and it's something that we're working on trying to get a resolution. We're going to know more about it, what the path we need to go in about a couple of months. As to details, one of the library staff can visit with you so you can drill down into some of the issues.
Is that system-wide, or is this out of Aldea Creek, or was this at the main library? Aldea Road, I meant.
This was at Preston Royal.
Okay.
But used to, I could rotate when if all the libraries didn't have the same schedule, then I could go to the Aldea branch, or I could go to another branch.
Okay.
With this current schedule, I can't do that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moore. Joey, could you at least get with her and make sure you got the name and contact so we can get back? Thank you again for coming down.
Can I just... Joey, would you keep me updated since that library is in my district on what you find out? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Madam Secretary.
Next speaker is Philip Brown. Mr. Brown will be followed by William Crowder, Eloy Trevino, Bill Benson.
My wife and I live at 3314 Knight Street, Dallas 75219. Many of the ordinances that you're considering the restrictions on the development of gas within the city will be detrimental to the revenue stream of Dallas's city government and other taxing authorities if it halts potential development. The city of Fort Worth has received $182 million as of June 1st, 2012, from leasing city-owned lands for natural gas drilling. School districts have benefited. Fort Worth ISD in 1 year received $861,000. Arlington ISD, Burleson ISD, and Mansfield ISD have each received $2.5 million in lease payments in 1 year, 2011. These numbers don't include any ad valorem tax figures. If you say it real fast, it doesn't sound like a whole lot of money, I expect. Environmental impacts are overstated by those who wish to have no development or to pass the ordinances that you're considering. There are over 4,000 wells and floodplains in the Barnett with no impact on groundwater. Air quality in the Barnett is similar to areas without gas development, including the city of Dallas. The gas is dry. The gas is dry without likelihood of volatile release. There are no gas liquids likely in the gas that's being considered in the western part of the city. The Texas Joint Groundwater Monitoring and Contamination Report says that no groundwater contamination has occurred in the Barnett. Modern casing methods have resulted in protection of subsurface resources, not just in the Barnett, but all across the oil patch. Consider the citizens who are property owners. Gas lease and bonus payments to homeowners and other property owners in cities west of us and in the rest of the Barnett have been substantial. Owners' restrictions take away my and my neighbor's property rights, particularly those in West Dallas. Requiring 130 acres clearance to drill a well, which is what the result of the 1,000-foot clearance is, or 260 acres, which is the result of the 1,500-foot clearance to drill a well, will effectively eliminate the development of any gas in Dallas. The hazards people fear are insurable. You should require operators to be fully and reasonably insured for liability for all the hazards that are faced by an oil operator, and include liability for pollution and environmental damage, similar to what's been established in other cities like Mansfield. And thank you for your attention.
Your next speaker is William Crowder. Not present. Eloy Trevino. Not present. Bill Betson. Mr. Betson will be followed by Trevor Gordon. Ozumba Lunx. Bill Betson. He's coming forward.
Thank you. My name is Bill Betson. I'm from 6717 Cliffwood, where I live with my wife and children. And it is an honor to be before you. I'm here to address issues you do not directly have any power over, DISD. However, I know you're interested. I'm a retired teacher, so I'm here to talk about one piece of hard data that was solidified on the first day of this month, and that is the enrollment number for our current senior classes in all of DISD. It is 531 students less than a year ago. That is the biggest drop in senior enrollment in DISD in 29 years. So please, you're going to see that in the news eventually. If things go the way they normally go and we lose, like we have for the last 2 years, 1,000 more students from this count until graduation, we're going to have the smallest graduation class we've had in 5 years. I hope that doesn't happen, but that's been happening for 2 years. Actually, that's not an abnormal number to lose 1,000 students. We've done that quite a bit in our history, and we've done it for the last 2 years. And this year, the graduation requirements are even rougher. So there's every reason to believe that will happen again. So, you know, we've got a problem, and I'm worried about it, and I know you're going to be worried about it. We've really got to be watching carefully what's happening in our school district. There are many things we're doing that are very good in the school district. I'm very proud of most of the changes going on in the school district. So I think there's a lot of good going on there. If you go to the internet right now and you put the word Dallas and you put the word dropout into Google, the first hit is going to be more details, is going to be my website. Studentmotivation.org is my website. And Dallas dropout, it's been the first hit for years. You'll go there, and if you go to the blog, you'll find this data and a lot more data on DISD. I've been bragging for 7 years about our progress, and I think it's been wonderful to celebrate that progress. This is the first drop in senior enrollment in 7 years. And I'm sorry to bring that to you, but I know that you're a group that probably needs to know this is happening. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Trevor Gordon. Trevor Gordon? Not present. Ozumba Lunt?
Yes, I passed out some text messages that I received from Richard Sheridan, and you all can copy them. You all can all have a copy. I don't care. I want you all to all have one. I'm here today appealing to the Dallas Police Department, the Justice Department, the whole criminal justice system, to tell Richard Sheridan to stop calling my house, to tell Richard Sheridan to stop sending me text messages. You know what I mean? Because he's always sending me text messages. He called me an a-hole. And that's not right. And I spent 3 minutes talking to address the council, and he wants to talk to me about that, and he wants to tell me what I can't do. I don't even know that man. He just tried to come in my life. He talks about Dwayne Calvary. He talked about Mr. Perot. He talked about Trammell Crow. He talked about all these people in this text, but he talked about Deion Sanders. And I want to see can I get one over to him, and I used to work with Mr. Crow. And I also used to work for a gentleman of statecraft named Mr. Ross Perot, was one of my bosses when I worked with John and Jerry Thompson in corporate security. And I used to frequent a place where I would eat dessert with a place with Ross Perot when I was working for Wackenhut Customs, who was part of Blackwater and that stuff, you know what I mean? But anyway, I used to work with Wackenhut Customs. We would eat at the same dessert place, and I would see Mr. Perot, and I would be corporate security. Think about going back to work. I'm feeling pretty good now. Maybe I'll be able to get back. But anyway, I got several deals I can read to you with here, but I won't do that. When he talks about the permanent people in this community, I mean, you know, they haven't done anything to him. I mean, you know, you're taking your cutter person, and then you pour salt in it. You know, if you all come against me or something like that, you know, I'll talk to you about it. But, you know, I don't believe in putting salt in a wound and going back and back and back because it gets real bad. You know, I know I'm dying here because the city didn't let me have my medication when I had cancer, and I still got some of my blood. You know, I'm supposed to die in 6 months, but I'm going to make it. I had some stuff, and I'm doing fine now. But I'm just saying, I don't like what he's doing. Please, I'm afraid of the man. I fear for my life for this man. I want him to stop. And you talk about Dwayne Carver. You're in a whole black community. You need to quit. Man, Dwayne Carver's a black man. Why don't you go talk to the white folk, man, where you at, if they'll take you. You know, I got more white men than you, man. You white. I don't never see you with nobody, man. You're trying to come up in a black community to be our friend. You know, I'm speaking our black community, man. My name is Chief Azuma Wagaluwa, Chief of the Texas African Afro-American Igbo tribe. And I am your senior, young man. I'm 68 years old. You know what? I don't like for you to talk to me like that. I don't have a felon or nothing. I don't want to go to penitentiary going on probably 16 by 5 months. I don't want to go to penitentiary messing with you, man. But I'm not going to take this stuff off of you. Had I not known who you were, I would laugh, change my phone number, go ahead on. But when you're going to be standing before me and let me know who you are and try to punk me out, no, sir, it don't work like that. I'm a soldier, man, and I'm not afraid. You already said I was a coward. You better rethink it, brother, because
thank
I just said on the
cow
machine gun in the U.S. Army being no punk.
Thank you.
It's scary.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. God bless you all.
Your next speaker is LaKoya London. Ms. London will be followed by Robert Ceccarelli, Roy Williams, William Hopkins, Kermit Mitchell, and Dolores Phillips.
Hello, LaKoya London. Whoa, 1873 Mockingbird. Okay, I'm here because, I mean, we in the province of Mockingbird being treated like crap. A lot of the senior citizens are really upset now. And I told them to call you. I gave everybody the code number, fair housing number. They turned the water off for 4 days, Friday through Monday. You know, and everybody was mad after we called Atmos Energy, which they have on the paper. They closed down. They turned the water off for a gas leak. Never in my life. I mean, we don't even have gas stoves. We have electricity. So everything was a big lie, really. And this is what our manager been doing to us, lying to us.
Then I want Chief Brown to look into Officer Flowers, because she come to our meetings. She come to our crime watch meetings saying she walk our property at 12 o'clock midnight. We have been camping out to find her walking this property at 12 o'clock midnight. Everybody. She hasn't walked this property one time. We want her to tell a lot of the older citizens, I mean senior citizens that be at that crime watch meeting the truth, you know. Because if you're not going to walk the property and you're supposed to begin a reduction in rent, I hope Chief Brown know this. She needs to be walking the property. You know, maybe get her dog or something and walk the property. I mean, it don't make any sense, you know, but a lie is a lie. And we tired of the lies. And so we want something done. And I told him I was going to publicly talk about it today. So, Chief Brown, please find out who Officer Flowers is, if that's her name. But she comes to our meetings and say that she walk our property. She live on our property. But we done had four cars stolen. Four. On our side. You know, it's certain places you can't even park in apartments or your car will be tampered with. And two of the cars that have been tampered with were senior citizens. You know, so we want our council members to care about our senior citizens in our area. You know, that's really what the deal is. You know, care about everybody. Don't care about some folks and then don't care about the other folks. We need some help. We want some help. We demanding help. We put you in office or you got in there somehow. You in there. So help everybody. So the thing is, she told me today she gonna evict me if I come do this, but it ain't no big deal. I'm bad in the courtroom. So, you know, I told her do whatever she gotta do, because I was going to speak on the issue today. You know, because I'm about to move, but you're not gonna rush me to move. Because I'm about to graduate from grad school, and she ain't gonna interfere with that. I just told her that you can't. I'm too smart for that. But we want some help, Madrano. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Robert Ceccarelli.
Good afternoon, everybody. Robert Ceccarelli, 1822 Young Street, Dallas, Texas. This is addressed to the mayor. He's not here, but it has to do with Mike Miles again. And Mike Miles is a data-driven person, so I'm going to give you some data about Mike Miles in a second. But I went to the open mic meeting last Monday night at North Dallas High School. Those meetings are different this year than they were last year. They're trying to protect Mike Miles' superintendency as far as his, you know, as far as position, as far as not getting looked so, you know, crazy the way he answers the questions. Right now, they're screening his questions. I asked a question about the 32% drop out in the senior enrollment in Colorado I brought up last week. They said it wasn't appropriate for Mike Miles to answer. Mike Miles said that was wrong, and I really believe they should give us an answer why there's so much percentage dropout of 32% of seniors and 23% of the high school enrollment in Colorado. The citizens really need an answer for that. Also, they're not taking any more verbal questions. Last year, they took verbal questions, on-the-spot questions from Mike Miles. They're not doing it this year. I said they're trying to protect him, try to make him look good in front of the media this year. So I really believe these open mic meetings are set up for Mike Miles not to look bad, and I wish they would change it and show what Mike Miles really is. Also, this is for the mayor. The ACT test went up from 17.2 to 17.6, but 18% of the blacks, there was a dropout, enrollment dropout of the blacks that took the test, and a 22% of Latinos decreased. With the whites, it was less than 1%. So if you look on the blog with Bill Benson, he will show that to you. He's got all the results, but a definite decrease of the blacks and Latinos that took the ACT test compared to last year, and that is why the ACT scores probably went up. I can't say for sure, but Mike Miles has a way of getting these figures and draw them into his favor. I really would look into it. Also, Roosevelt and Madison High School, they had probably the worst test scores in the district and in the state, but they had a 90% graduation rate, a 20% increase from the year before. Now, the mayor really wants to look into to help out South Dallas schools. he would look into those results to find out why that happened. The Dallas Morning News had a blog about it. He made a big stink about it. And if he really wants to help out DISD, I would ask the mayor to look into those results. Also, one more thing is holding students accountable. Mike Miles has refused to talk about the students, hold himself accountable for their behavior in academics. Mike Miles has recognized this. It's always been done in a newspaper and in open mic meetings, and he refused to do this because he's just trying to get the teachers and principals for his own goodwill.
Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is Roy Williams. Mr. Williams is not present. William Hopkins, not present. Kermit Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell will be followed by Dolores Phillips.
My name is Kermit Mitchell, 5659 Marblehead Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75232, District 3. I'm before you today, and the handouts you may have is about Dallas Police and Fire Departments and the Omni Dallas Hall Convention Hotel. Now, these seem like very distant apart subjects, but at the end of the discussion, we're going to see where they're very closely related. The policemen and firemen have negotiated for years to get a contract that will recognize their step performance and across-the-board pay increases. The agreement under consideration has provisions for increases being dependent upon future factors, as an increase in proper valuations and or tax rate increases to be accomplished. The bottom line, there's no money to pay for these things now. The Omni Dallas Convention Center Hotel is currently being financed at 7.1% interest, and the proposal before the city manager and before the chairman of the and the city council is to refinance that debt at a current rate of about 4.1%. That's 3% difference. The offer to buy the hotel out of that debt at an appraised value is also before the city manager and the chairman of the budget and finance and audit subcommittee. The sale of the hotel and the refinancing of the remaining debt from 7% to 4% would pay for these increases that the firemen need. And by the way, it would also pay the $19 million back to Trinity East. It would pay for a lot of other things that I heard here today. The sale of the hotel and the refinancing of the remaining debt is a win-win-win solution. The Dallas police and firemen get their overdue and deserved pay increases. Now, the taxpayers of Dallas pay almost one-half of the current cost of the same hotel. No change. Now, the baby, the hotel, is taken out of the hot bathwater of crushing debt to get the profitability. Now, the only loser in this would be the original bondholders that wouldn't get 7% anymore. They'd be getting 4% now. The sale of the hotel and the refinancing of the remaining debt is easy. It's on the table before you now. It's much more difficult and time-consuming to raise the tax rate or wait for valuation of property. Recently, we lavished great praise on the DFW airport for saving $1 billion in their debt. The Dallas police and fire departments deserve for you to at least do the same thing for them. The taxpayers of Dallas deserve relief from the 7% financing in the marketplace. The future of the hotel deserves relief from crushing debt of $480 million to develop it to $217 million that it's worth. Therefore, this is a call for full transparency. This is a call to make the Dallas police and firemen aware that their pay increases are buried in the Omni Hotel. This is a call to sell the hotel and refinance the debt. And
thank
that
you.
That the Dallas police departments
thank
get their contract now.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next speaker. Ms.
Your final speaker is Dolores Phillips.
Hi, my name is Dolores Phillips. Address P.O. Box 530236, Grand Prairie, Texas. In the absence of the mayor, the other council members, to all of you who are present, it's ironic to me that on this very day, streets in downtown are being closed to in memory of the 50th anniversary of John F. Kennedy being slaughtered by methodical means of the minds of corruption. And to this very day, an ongoing corruption, cover-up of corruption of the altered 911 call is well known. I will not be bullied into silence. I was not born as an American to be bullied into silence. Mayor Rollins knows at this point in time that 911 call was altered to protect this incorporation, the manager, the 911 operator that answered the call and said that I could not make a police report. And it's just amazing to me how men in uniform who were created to be the safekeeper of women are now being bullies in uniform. And if Dallas does not stop the corruption and say, hey, we've made a big mistake here, you're going to continue to have rookie cops terrorizing the citizens of Dallas, because when rookie cops know that corruption is ongoing by senior authorities who are considered peace officers in uniform, rookie cops will grow to be senior authority who are supposed to be peace officers. What I'm humbly trying to share with you is on October 25th, I had a meeting with Herb Cotner down at Dallas Police Department to resolve the issue of the known altered 911 call. Mary Lou Thorne was there. This was this past October 25th. We had the meeting at DPD Central Station on Lamar in the lobby. Corporal Cotner said he had spoke with Mayor Rollins that morning, and the way he said it, he was letting me know that he was going to end it that day. Every time I said corrupt or the word corruption, Senior Corporal Herb Cotner became angry. He asked me, do you fear that anyone is out for you? I said, it's no doubt in my mind that it is more than a few put on the highways to bully me. I gave him the report number of my truck being shot July 19th. He said he was giving me four options because he feared for my safety. He said, one, you either go with me voluntarily. Two, I call ADAPT, and if they say that you're safe to drive, I will let you go. Or three, I take you voluntarily. Make a long story short, he never gave me the fourth option. I talked to Corporal Cotner, just as I've been speaking to you each time on this Wednesday, and what I'm trying to tell you, it is my opinion that Mayor Rollins and Corporal Cotner had a meeting of the minds to take me to Green Oaks as a dehumanizing bullying tactic to say enough is enough. And I say every Wednesday I will be down here to speak of the ongoing corruption of the 911 call. And Dallas remains to be corrupt and crooked.
Thank you.
Your speakers, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Do I have a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting at exactly 4:15 p.m.